The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
What's that? Gabe smashed his balls? You're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan, John, and Gabe.
Well, I'm upper class, high society. God's gift to ballroom notoriety. And I always fill my ballroom, the event is never small. The social pages say I've got the biggest balls of all. I've got big balls, I've got big balls. They're such big balls, and they're tiny big balls. And he's got big balls, and she's got big balls.
But we've got the best balls of them all.
Nobody knows where John is, so we're just going to start.
Oh, are we
welcome
recording?
To NPR.
You got to do the Peter Griffin, the
oh man.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
Yeah, I'm Juan.
John will be joining us shortly. He's traveling between his home and
between
the comic
space
book shop. Between he's inner
in
space
a, he's
and
in a
outer
different
space.
Parallel universe.
It'd be kind of cool if we could do that.
That would be awesome, but find our way back home, not like the sliders.
No, or Quantum Leap.
Yeah, but he didn't go between universes.
I know, but
he
you
just
know
went
what I'm
between
saying.
Time.
He's like stuck.
Yeah,
and I can't.
I don't
get
think
out.
You know what you're talking about.
I watched a shitload of Quantum Leap just because I don't do a podcast about it.
Hey, me neither.
Lies.
I'll punch you right in your face.
You edit it and whatnot, so you like, I listen to this stuff.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't know
what's going
on.
I don't know
on.
What's going on right now.
So, yeah.
Wow. Daughter's all right. We just got off. Flipped off for no reason, and she's in her second outfit, I think. Fucking women.
My pants were too big.
Let's be really clear about how there are like a lot of women that live in my home. So please,
yeah, but
shut
I don't,
up,
I don't
Juan.
Live here.
Juan's like, I'm out.
Yeah,
I'm
see
like,
ya.
I'm left to suffer.
Goodbye.
So, yeah,
nice.
How's
our
it going?
Robert Kurtzman interview's out and about, and I'm fucking excited for it.
I know, and the Chris Hunt like. That's not even like an interview,
no,
but Chris Hunt participating.
No, he just likes to talk.
Oh, and it was awesome. It was really good. First off, let's start with that. Chris, congratulations
yes.
on winning Graphic Novel of the Year from IGN. Like, that's super awesome.
Even though he doesn't care, but does care.
He cares.
In the talk, he's like, yeah, I don't care. I'm not really into it. You know, I'm not in it for the awards.
He cares.
And then he won it, and it was all over Facebook.
But no, that's super awesome.
It's cool.
Cool. I can't think of a book more deserving because it was my favorite fucking book last year. So, yeah, that was good times.
Cool guy. Cool as shit.
Yeah, we love – I can't wait to see what he does next.
I was reading something because I tagged him. I tagged his profile, and then I tagged his cartoonist profile.
Yeah.
And he shared it, and somebody, one of his friends, is like, ha, you're a cartoonist, and like to make fun of him or something. And then it's so stupid because it's not really that funny, but he retorted with like, ha, you're engaged. Like – I was like, okay, that's funny.
That's valid. That's great. He's like, I'm free.
Aww.
No, I like being married.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It's not for everybody, though.
No.
And there's definitely no way that he could, like, slum it homeless for an entire year in fucking Europe if he was married.
That's true. It looks like he got a new place.
Yeah, he did. And set it up, and I was following all that on Instagram.
Nice.
He's pretty excited about it, so it's weird. It's weird, like, you know, we talk to the guy because he does this comic book that
right.
we like, but then you friend him on, like, Facebook, like, just, like, as an actual Facebook friend,
right.
like a person, not the cartoons page. And,
right.
You know, I follow him on Instagram, and that's, like, just his Instagram feed. And next thing I know, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Chris got a new apartment. Like, I've hung out with the guy, like, a million times. And,
well, if you don't bitch out, you'll get to hang out with him in San Diego.
Dude, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm hoping I get to.
We've heard that for 2 years now.
Dude.
I'm working on it, Juan. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
The reality is I have twice as many kids as both of you guys. and a job that's awful. So.
Hey, it's not my fault. I knew when to stop putting my penis into things when I could get people pregnant.
Hey, I did too, but then I was done with like my marriage, and I had a new marriage, and the new wife was like, I want the baby.
No!
I told her, she was kind of upset with me at the time when I told her, but now she agrees with me. I was like, you get one. Like, No more.
They're starting to overrun the house.
They do overrun the house. All their shit is everywhere. It's nothing but toys and bullshit all over the house. I only get one room for my comic books.
I know, God. That's weird.
Yeah.
Me too, I only get one room. Yeah. It's a big room, it's
your
a room.
Whole basement. Oh, man. So I want to wait. So we always start with sex stuff, but I want to wait because I have a very special story about my balls. I want to wait till John's on to tell that because he really wants to know.
Nice.
Dude, he messaged. He's like, what happened to your balls? I'm like,
it was pretty funny.
It's awkward. It's really weird.
It's not awkward.
So I'm just going to start talking.
So Constantine was picked up by a CW seed
as
an animation, cartoon. As a cartoon.
Yeah,
I don't know how I feel about that.
I think it's a cool idea.
I just don't think that those kinds of things get
noticed enough.
Right.
I think a big part of the problem, I've been seeing this a lot. There's a station called CISO, and CISO is like a comedy station that's only available by subscription on the internet.
Right.
That's great, and it's a really good idea, and they have a ton of content that I want to watch, but I already pay for Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. Like, just put that stuff on Hulu too. Like, work out a deal with some of those groups so that I don't have to pay an extra, like, you know, $5-$10 a month to watch your station because, you know, you just didn't want to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, but
I almost feel like it's a way of keeping him relevant or kind of – because it's Matt Ryan still.
Right.
It's a way of keeping him in the eye of people because he's going to be in the Justice League Dark animation cartoon thing too. I just don't think that that's the right way to do it because I don't think you're putting enough eyes on it. I really think that putting him, even if it's not in his own show, putting him in CW stuff would be the way to do that, to make sure that he stays relevant, to make sure that – to test the waters of being able to bring a CW show, you know, a Constantine show to CW. I think that's the better way to go. I'd never even heard of CW Seed, to be honest,
exactly.
until then.
And, like, all of the stations have something like that. Like, almost all of the major networks have some weird, like, internet station that has a ton of free content on it. There's a show out there called Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Slingshot. Okay? And it's just, like, randomly out there.
Right.
I've never watched a single episode of it, and I probably never will because I would have to go hunt it down on the internet somewhere, and I'm just not that interested.
Right.
So,
side note, I like Marvel. John's calling.
Oh, John's calling. Headphones on.
And we're back.
Hello. We got
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
So we got started, but all we've talked about is Constantine. So I saved my ball story for you.
Yeah. Literally just got a thing that said we're ready, and you already started.
Well, I texted you 10 minutes ago.
No, I literally just got a text like 2 seconds ago.
Oh, weird. That's weird.
Minute ago it says we're back.
We are ready whenever, sir. I sent that at 10:48.
Oh, motherfuckers.
The we're back came from Skype, and I assumed that it sent you a notification.
I did.
Ah, see, I just did that after the 15-minute wait for you for my phone.
And you ever, like, you can actually call on the phone.
I never know where you're at, and I don't want to bother you.
Dude, it's a cell phone, man. It's always in my pocket.
A cellular phone?
What is this
cellular
so-called
telephone
thing that you speak of? We just started, like, 5 minutes
pants
ago, buddy. You're good.
Literally all we've talked about.
I'm back!
We're talking about Constantine being picked up by the CW Seed thing.
Yeah, that's weird.
I said the same thing.
I'll watch it. I think if I know how to get to it, I think it's an internet thing.
We just said the same thing.
That's kind of exactly what I said about the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. slingshot. Like, it exists. I know it exists. Like, I would have to go hunt it down to watch it, and I'm probably not gonna.
Is that like an actual fucking – it's not an actual fucking slingshot, right? Like, it's not something that you – I don't know what the slingshot is.
It's just an offshoot of it. Yeah.
I think it follows
one or the other character.
Okay.
It's weird. They're just weird. I told Gabe that, in my opinion, Constantine is better served if you're trying to keep him in the eye of people, or you're trying to keep him relevant until Justice League Dark comes out, to put him into the CW universe, even if he's not in every show. But when he was in Arrow, he upticked the ratings in a big way.
Yeah.
Like, why not throw him into, like, Supergirl or The Flash or something like that for a 2-episode arc? Like, it's not like it's going to kill him. It's not like – I mean, that actor doesn't seem to be doing anything besides championing. It's going to be huge. I got the best
words. It's hard to talk like regular.
What speech impediment? Oh, man, we might
sometimes
get an email about that.
I don't know what I'm saying sometimes. Sometimes things just come out of my mouth.
Oh, man.
So
he put off the ball talk. Well, you know, I don't know if we're done talking about Constantine, but I think there's better ways to serve his character.
Me too.
You know what's weird is that Constantine is also on Justice League Action. Which is the new Justice League cartoon series that's on Cartoon Network.
Is that Matt Ryan still?
No, it is not him. It's not him as a voice. But, like, the character, like, the first episode, the hour-long premiere episode, had fucking Shazam and Black Adam and Superman and Martian Manhunter and Wonder Woman, and then, like, Swamp Thing, Plastic Man, and Constantine. And it was awesome. Like, it's amazing. I highly recommend checking it out. I think the first episode is on demand.
Justice League Action. Okay.
And, like, Kevin Conroy comes back to voice Batman, which is always amazing. But I don't know if either of you guys watched the Justice League cartoon or the Justice League. There was another one. Justice League United, I think, was the other one.
I watched United for quite a while. That was pretty good.
United was the comic. I can't fucking...
Unlimited. Justice League Unlimited, maybe?
Yeah. It was Unlimited. But it's just... It's weird to me that they would have... I mean, good for him. More exposure, you know?
Right. That's what I said, but I really think he would be better served doing something else, in my opinion.
I feel like it's one of those things that'll probably pick up more steam when it gets released on, like, DVD or something like that. Because people are going to see it at the store and be like, what? There's a Constantine cartoon, and just pick it up. You know what I mean?
But maybe that's how they want to keep him, because the Justice League Dark movie is a cartoon. I don't know. So,
yeah.
Which I think is lame, too.
They're also supposed to be doing a live-action show now.
For
it's called Dark Universe, like that was announced. The guy who did the movie with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt is directing it.
Weird. I thought that was still a cartoon. I didn't know it was going to be live action.
It's going to be both. They're doing an animated, you know, a DC animated movie,
right?
But they're also, the live action movie is not dead because it was announced that. Picked up. That's going to be called Dark. I talked about this on the show like 3 months ago.
Maybe.
Yeah, that was like That was 3 months ago, though. Good lord, dude.
Oh Jesus! Have a fucking memory.
I got a shit memory, buddy. I got to write everything down.
Damn it! Write it down,
man. That news is from like August.
See, 3 months.
Yeah, like I just looked it up. It just says that DC live action Dark Universe is happening.
So there you go.
Nice. That's cool. Well, I'm in on that.
So you guys want to hear what happened?
Yeah. Okay. I just smashed your balls.
So this is actually a
Mel wasn't even there. It's
pretty
weird.
Uninteresting story, like in the long run. But so
he fell.
You jazz it up a little, you know, for the show.
I'm gonna try.
And then a dildo rammed him in the ass.
So you know, we live in Colorado, so there's snow and ice all the time. right? From, you know, the first from the first snow until like June or whatever. And I literally just, I was walking around the front of my car and slipped on some snow covered ice. I came down super, super hard on my knee and just like mashed my balls in between my legs, right? And for like 2 days, I was way more focused on my knee. Like my knee hurt way, way more, right? And then after a couple days, I realized that like every time I sat down, it hurt. And like every time I got up, it hurt. And like if I walked for more than like 5 or 10 minutes, it hurt. I was like, man.
Wait, you got up or it got up?
No, just sitting it, up, it standing never, up. It didn't get it up never at got any up. Time during this. It was like, it went into fucking hiding. Like, yeah. So
it's hibernating for the winter. That's what's going on.
So like Wednesday, I got they called in to have us come in late to work. Okay, so I had a little bit of extra time. And as I was moving around, I was like, God damn, like this really hurts. So I went into the bathroom and I checked it out, and my nuts were the size of a fucking baseball. Like easy. I mean, just
impressive.
Super swollen, super painful. So I called in sick, and I went to the ER because I was like, oh my God, like am I gonna have to have a testicle removed?
No,
like
no. You went to urgent
Yeah, well, so I went to urgent care, and they told me, like, so...
We can't handle nuts this big.
Well, no, they they told me it could be... They told me it could be one of two things. It could either just be, like, you know, basically a really bad bruise, or I could have something called testicular torsion, which is where your nut spins around and cuts off circulation, and they have to, like, remove it. So they're like, to check to see which of those two things it is, we have to do an ultrasound. And to do an ultrasound, you have to go to the emergency room. So I went to the emergency room, and somebody ultrasounded my balls. All right. And
they're just dangling on the side of a table.
Not on the side. I was laying on my back and like, so
you tell me you made like small talk with the lady.
Well, I didn't know what to do. So I didn't know what to do. So the whole time I was thinking to myself, I just got to say something funny. Like that'll break the ice and then it won't be awkward at all. You know? So I'm laying there and she's like, you know, she puts the gel on and starts, you know, starts ultrasounding my nuts. And I go, so is it a boy or a girl? And she goes, it's twins. I was like, damn it. Her joke's better than my joke. So,
hey, lady. Touché ball lady.
And then like every
ball lady.
And then like every time she moved the ultrasound machine, it was like, ugh, ow. So
it almost sounded like he was ejaculating there for a second.
Yeah. No.
That sounds more like
Mom cares real good about your education, boy.
Oh man. But so yeah, it was interesting. So I took a couple days off of work because, like, literally every time I moved around in the house, it was like, ugh. And even now, like, I'm sitting on the edge of chairs. So, like, you know how your balls are. When you sit down, they're kind of like sitting on the chair. So I've been sitting on the edge.
Old man balls.
Yeah.
They're coming out of his fucking jeans.
So I read, you know, I was freaking out. So I was looking online to see, like, do I, you know, should I go to the hospital? Like, what should I do?
don't disguise your other ball fetish.
No. This is amazing. There is a medical.
And people are coming in the store.
There's a medical deformity. No, stay on for this. Tell them hi and then listen to this.
Okay.
There's a medical, like a genetic deformity where your balls hang too low, and it's literally called bell clapper syndrome.
Wait, hold on. It's called what?
It's called bell clapper syndrome.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Dude, I read that and I was laughing so hard that my balls hurt. Like,
oh shit, I'm developing bell clappers.
I wasn't developing bell clappers. I was developing balls.
Full on clapping.
It looked like the toe that people put on their giant trucks to just fucking dangle in the back.
Seriously, it was
the nuts. I hate those. It's so stupid. The worst, one of the worst moments, because we live like in a fairly rural part of Colorado. Right. So there's a ton of dudes that have like the swinging nuts hanging from the back of their truck. You know what's awkward? Having to explain that to your 3-year-old. Dad, what's that on the back of that guy's truck? Shut up.
Nothing. Well, you see, that truck is a mail.
It's a mail plane.
Juan, you have to start this segment with a sound clip from AC/DC's We've Got the Biggest Balls of Them All.
Yes, you so do.
Okay, apparently that's happening.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's funny.
So moving on.
Moving away from balls. You got any more ball jokes you want to throw in there?
Yeah, I can, but I think he's had probably enough. We'll let him slide.
Oh, man. Who's in the store? Anybody we know?
Nope.
Nice.
I like that.
Me too.
I like you, John.
Yep.
He can hear you.
He can hear you. You just can't hear him.
I will, absolutely.
He said, never!
I never. Hate you.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yes. Such a
beautiful face, John. Oh, likewise.
He said, eh.
Your face
she
is.
Can't hear me?
He said, your face is aight.
You're okay. Aight donuts.
What? How you doing?
Aight donuts. It's a meme.
He's dumb. Don't listen to him. I know he's
dumb. I'm him anyway. All right. Anyways, so today, January 15th, the season finale of BBC's Sherlock is going to be premiering in movie theaters in the UK. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm out.
See, okay. I don't get why you don't. Yeah, screw you guys.
I've never watched it. I don't know anything about it.
Well, then you can't say anything about it. It's really well done.
That's he didn't. He said he's out.
I assume he said something shit.
No, not really.
Oh, she can't hear me? Oh.
No, she can't hear she you because we headphones have our headphones on and she's just talking.
Oh,
it's hilarious, though. I like it.
Fine. I'm going to move on from that because you guys clearly don't give a fuck.
I've never seen Sherlock. What am I going to say? Yeah, cool. I'm excited.
About Benedictine Cumber's slut.
Sound clip there.
Wow.
So Entertainment Weekly this week released some pictures of the Defenders.
Yes.
That was pretty cool. They look pretty sweet. Awesome. I like all of those TV shows and assume that I'm going to like Iron Fist.
It's weird that they're not promoting Iron Fist as much yet because that's going to come first.
Right.
Even though I'm excited for Defenders and I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. But it's weird that they're not promoting that as much.
So I think they're just, since they're still doing like the build up to it, they want, what it feels like is they want to say this show is coming out and it ties to this so that people aren't confused. Because I think it's going to start off very much so origin story, which is, you know, with the Kun Loon and all that stuff is incredibly far removed from like the Hell's Kitchen, New York scope of
things.
So should be pretty interesting. I like when John is working while we're talking and it's just this confusing mess of him talking to somebody else. It's hilarious.
I think
to
he put us down.
What?
Oh, no. He did.
Nothing.
He did.
Nothing,
John. We love you. Long time.
So, yeah. I thought those were
John
cool
is a bitch and he hasn't caught up with any of the whole universe. So, none of that Marvel universe stuff.
He's not busy or anything. God.
Right.
Thanks, I'm busy,
Mal.
Too.
Can't hear me, but. Anyway.
Thanks, Mal. You can't hear me. Oh, man. Go
so
ahead.
I don't really have any more news. I just have stuff that I've watched and read and stuff. So
I don't have any news, I don't think. John, you have any news?
Something's going on. Like, they might be developing Rob Liefeld's Wildstorm or something. Brigade.
Yeah,
somebody said something about.
I saw the price of Brigade shoot up randomly, so.
Yeah, which is dumb.
But we can't talk about that on CCBE.
Why?
Because people will turn it into drama. Like they always do.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
There was somebody posted something yesterday or the day before about, hey, is it a dick move if somebody buys 5 copies of something of the same issue? And then it turned into drama.
It is.
Marika was like it's funny because you can't tell tone really when you're typing, and so people were getting into arguments, and they're like, I'm not trying to defend my position. I just wanted to state an opinion. It's just funny. It makes me laugh.
Internet drama is funny that way.
I type something to get it off my chest, and then I'm like, all right, I'll delete it. It doesn't ever get posted.
What you should start doing is making like really contrarian and asshole statements, posting them, let people go crazy, and then just delete the comment because that's funny.
Matt will kick me out of the group.
He wouldn't kick you out of the group for that. If you told him you were doing it on purpose, he would laugh and let you do it.
John, I'm going to need you to turn down the cash register noise.
I'm stamping boards. Cash register noise.
Ka-ching. That's what it sounds
does
like.
Sound like it, yeah.
Like an old timey cash register.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, sorry. You got new cash register.
What? Exactly.
Oh, shit. I don't really have any news. I'll thumb through comicbook.com to see what catches my eye. But I've actually been...
I'll read someone else's news our news.
I like that.
Super
I
classy.
Like that.
That's how it is anyways. I mean, we don't come up with any of this stuff on our own.
I don't talk to Entertainment Weekly.
Right?
Fucking Gabe.
I just talk about the stuff that I've read and that sort of thing, not...
He'll be right back, you son.
I don't really read a whole lot of news.
I love news.
So, like, I've gotten to a point where there's always so much going on, like, news-wise, that I don't just feel like following it very often. Like, if I see something that's interesting, like, I'll read the article, but I don't usually... I don't know. I'd rather
That's what I do.
I'd rather just talk about the stuff that I've actually read and experienced. So, that's right.
Yeah. That's what makes us... Good show.
Speaking of things that I've watched recently, so like Christmas weekend or maybe the week after that, sat down with Ashton. No, was Ashton there? I don't remember, but Bailey was there, and we watched Yoga Hosers.
Oh,
it's on Netflix.
Ashton
was there.
I watched it pre-Netflix, and then when it was on Netflix.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious, right?
The problem is I will like anything that Kevin Smith puts out, so it's very hard for me to be objective.
This is true. So the part of it that got to me that I really fucking loved is that as my daughter was watching it, she looks at the screen and goes, "Holy shit, that's me and my best friend.
Right.
That's me and Alyssa." And what's awesome about that is that's exactly what Kevin Smith was intending to do. He wanted to make a movie for like teenage girls that showed them like empowered and doing dumb stuff and saying funny things. And it's exactly what it's supposed to be. Like the people that are shitting on it, what idiots. Like,
well, you can tell right away when you watch that it's not meant – it's a tween movie. It's not for older people.
And it's not meant to be, like, good. It's just meant to be dumb and fun. I don't know.
I mean, fucking Ralph Garman, all he does is quote people in the fucking movie. It's hilarious.
That is, like, one of my favorite scenes, though, when she goes, "That's not Batman." Batman's like, "Where's the trigger?"
Oh, yeah.
I think you made a good point, though. You said that...
You probably need to actually talk in the
microphone. Here, you want me to plug in a mic for you?
No, because I'm not going to follow
up. Oh, all right. Well, yeah.
No, you made a good point. You said that people who have teenage daughters... There you go. People who have teenage daughters understand it better, and they think it's funny because they have teenage daughters, and teenage daughters are fucking dumb. And then people who don't have them think the movie's stupid.
Right.
So I think you're right. It's a perspective thing.
It's a lot like Jersey Girl. Like I saw Jersey Girl before I had any kids and I hated it. And then I had kids and watched Jersey Girl again. I was like, oh, this is a really good movie.
You can
like,
because
I can connect to it. Right. And I think there's a disconnect with a lot of people when it comes to like Tusk is another good example. Not all of us have been walruses. No, just kidding. I don't think everybody is familiar with like the genre of horror that he was trying to like kind of capture when making Tusk. Like, not everybody's seen Videodrome. Not everybody's, like, really interested in, like, you know, body horror movies like The Fly and stuff like that. So watching it, there's a tonality to it that, like, reflects not just, like, the comedic silly parts of it, but also, like, this really intense, like, body horror aspect of it that I think a lot of people just didn't get. So
I've liked Tusk. It creeped me out, and now that you just touched on, like, The Fly and stuff, I think that's why it creeped me out.
Yeah.
I watched The Fly when I was, like, 9. That shit was fucked up.
Yeah. It's
no, thank you.
When he shoots the shit out of his fingernail. Oh, it's so gross.
Hey, can I do my
show? Awesome movie.
Yeah, go. This is, yeah, since you're down here, go for it.
Random.
That's what she said.
Hey, John Blackshire, I just wanted to say hello from Colorado. Good job winter grilling in Ohio. Keep it up. And it is not always winter in Colorado. It's only 10 months long. We get like two
whole months. I'm wearing flip-flops right now, by the way.
That is true. He's wearing shorts and flip-flops because there's no new snow on the ground.
There's not.
You're fucking dumb. It's cold outside.
Not that cold.
You're an idiot.
Like a sauna at the comic book store.
What the fuck is wrong with you, Tina? It is cold outside.
A
sauna.
I love that you said it. Sauna.
A sauna.
Sauna.
But anyway, hi John. I miss you, dude.
Hi Mel. I miss you too.
No, she's talking to another John.
No, not you. Nobody cares about you.
She misses you too.
She misses you too. Just.
Miss you long
eat
time.
A dick.
She can't. There's too much ball in the way.
Have a ball sandwich.
It's not a ball sandwich. It's like a ball, like, snowball.
It was like, dude.
It's like those full of marshmallow and coconut.
It's like the new cradle thing. Somebody else's mouth?
Like it's like those hostess. Gross.
I meant the hostess snowball, but yeah, gross.
Whatever you said, I'm really glad I didn't hear it. No, I was thinking pink hostess snowballs all like covered in coconut and shit. I don't like those either.
Snowball's got a different connotation now and forever.
Dutch rudder.
Oh. All right, goodbye. You
Side
guys are
note,
nasty.
Maybe John sent
I hate
us.
Snow, bye.
Maybe your friend sent us the automated fucking voicemail that we got.
Yeah, he said he sent a robot.
That's who it was. I didn't know who it was, and I just included it.
John, which one was it?
It's all. It's all. I just wanted to give a review on Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Oh,
I was
one.
Like, what the fuck is this? I don't know. I'll put it in there.
That's awesome.
Have fun Dutch ruddering each other.
Does it really say that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and I somehow magically connected those things. That's awesome.
I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'll include it.
Nice.
I want to hear
My
it.
My friends are weird.
You want? I can't. I would let it play, but for some reason you can't hear stuff when I play it on the computer. You'll have to listen to the newest episode
because
you need to listen to the Robert Kurtzman interview.
Yes.
So I know something that John wants to talk about.
Uh oh.
Your dick.
Wait, my dick or Gabe's dick?
I don't think it really matters.
I'm okay with that.
Just dicks in general.
Dick.
On the hole. In the hole.
Hey, John.
By the hole.
Hey, John.
Yes, Gabe.
John.
Yeah, Gabe.
Did you like Rogue One?
I did like Rogue One. It was fucking awesome.
I love it. Have you seen it yet, Juan?
No, I have not seen it yet.
What?
God damn it, Juan.
I have kids.
Yeah, but my kids can't go with me to the movie theaters.
My kid did not go with me to the movie theater to see that movie.
Well, I don't have a ton of babysitters. I have one person who...
Your whole family is up there.
I would watch your kids.
They're all very busy, you son of a bitch.
Oh, you're up your ass.
What?
Yeah.
No, I watched the first probably 15 minutes of it, if that makes you feel any better.
Not really.
But I really want to watch it.
Nothing going on in the first 15 minutes of it.
Yes, sir. A dude gets capped.
So, realistically, Rogue One starts out incredibly slowly. Like, because it's trying to build, like, the framework of where everything is and, like, who the players
are.
Because it has to introduce, like, all these, like, fresh characters, like, new characters that haven't existed before. So it has, like, a pretty slow start. So that first 15 minutes to, like, probably I would say first half an hour of the movie is just story and character building.
Well, and the part that I saw was the guys coming to the island and or the planet or wherever they're at, and the girl hiding and you know, some shit was going on. Yeah. But and you know, we saw fucking Forrest Whitaker eye for a little bit, but you coined that, by the way. You coined that shit, by the way. So
shut up. I hashtag Forrest Whitaker eye.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What's up, Chase?
So, but I want to see it really badly, and it's weird because I've ingrained myself with TV shows lately, and I haven't done any movies. But I need to watch it.
It is, like, I think I've already said this. Like, it is currently my favorite Star Wars movie. Like, I love Empire, but I like this one a little bit better.
I wonder if some of that has to do with this not. I mean, it ties into the main story, but it's not like a main story. You know, does that make sense?
The way I explained it to Mel, and this actually has almost everything to do with that, is it reminds me so much of the books, where the books took characters that you weren't familiar with and expanded the universe and said, look, here's, like, this is what the Rebel fleet was like. This is what, you know, this planet looks like, these groups of people. Like, this is the rebellion before the rebellion really got off of the ground. Yeah. I mean, it's all of those things that the books did so well, but in a movie. And I was really excited to see it. I was excited to see, you know, the Gold Squadron and Blue Squadron and Red Squadron, because I loved the X-Wing books when I was a kid. And I don't know. It was just really, really well done.
Well, I mean, we've had Luke and Leia and all them for forever. You know, not that we don't want to see those things, but it's nice in a big universe to see the different areas. Yeah.
What about – I really loved – so this is more for John since you haven't seen it. How about the Temple Guardians – from Jedha? Isn't that like the coolest thing, John? Oh, he's not there. Shit. Yeah, I don't think he's there. So you haven't seen this too much, but I'm going to look up their names because they're both pretty famous, like Hong Kong action movie actors. Sorry, you'll probably have to edit this.
Hey, so if I don't have the headphones in, can you hear me? Is it okay?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
Okay. I don't know if that's a deal or not.
If you don't know if that's a what?
I don't know if that's a huge deal.
No,
it's not echoey.
The only reason I would tell people to wear headphones is because sometimes when we speak, I can hear myself on the other end of the line. But I can't hear anything right now. So
if people can hear you, then they don't look at me as weird. So
that's awesome.
They probably still do.
So I'm going to start this over because I asked you a question and you weren't, like, you didn't have your headphones on.
You just left.
There's just like dead silence. So how about the Temple Guardians of Jedha? Like, isn't that like the coolest concept?
Oh, yeah. Dude, absolutely.
So played by, what's wrong?
We may have to get new. I just put brand new batteries in this thing today.
Weird.
And they're almost already dead.
So are we pausing for a second?
No, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
So they were played by Donnie Yen and Wen Jiang, who are, you know, Hong Kong kung fu movie actors. Sure. Donnie Yen is probably most well known at this point for the Ip Man trilogy, which, like, tells the story of a dude named Ip Man. It's not like Ip Man like a superhero. But he's the guy that started Wing Chun Kung Fu, which is the martial arts style that Bruce Lee trained under and then developed his own style. So, like, all of this, like, you know, Asian action movie influence and all this war movie influence and spy movie influence all kind of put into Rogue One just made it such a cool, like, seamless universe that just ties – like, it made me want to go back and watch episode 3 and episode 4 again. Like, it is good times. It's really good. You should.
I heard that I was reading an article that they came up with, like a brand new fighting style for this movie, because they played a bunch of people. No, they played like a whole. I heard they played multiple people. I could be wrong.
I don't think so.
No,
not that I noticed. I mean, they may have like as stunt doubles and stuff,
right.
But I'm not sure. I could look.
Well, and it was cool to see the movie add on to the mythos of Star Wars. I mean, you know, it's been done, and then they threw all of the extended universe stuff out when Marvel took over. You know, when I guess Disney took over technically, but you know, the whole, it was just neat. It was neat to see there were enough little Easter eggs in there for fans of, you know, hardcore fans of the original stuff, and
like Bantha Milk.
What's that? Yes,
like Bantha, like the Blue Milk.
Yeah.
Yep. Blue Milk and the we're wanted men. We have the death sentence on 12 systems. They were in the freaking movie.
Yeah, awesome. Those guys were awesome. I leaned over to Ash and I was like, "You recognize those guys?"
Yeah. So just to go back to what I was saying,
because with the advancement in technology and all this stuff, like the fight scenes above Scarif, when the, you know, it's X-Wings and TIE fighters and they're trying to break that little shield thing, just unbelievable. And yet Grand Moff Tarkin and Princess Leia as CGI characters are still not fully believable. You know, so there's still something there that we can't nail a human digitally.
So, interesting note on that. Both Mel and Ashton didn't know that Tarkin was not real. Like,
really?
Yeah, so I went into the movie knowing that he was digitally rendered, and they didn't. And neither of them noticed until I pointed it out. And like, when somebody points it out to you, you notice it.
Then you're like, I knew there was something funny.
I knew
there
was something weird about it, but you can't put your finger on it. I feel like it's
literally,
it's very, very close. Like you said, we can't quite get it, but we've got it down enough that if you don't know, I don't think a lot of people notice.
Sure.
What were you going to say about the...
So, the fighting style, who is this? Donnie Yen. He says that, I've done a lot of martial arts. Yen explains he was 9 years old when he started doing martial arts. Every movie I would create a unique martial art for each movie. So in Rogue One, my character Chirrut,
yeah.
I designed a bit of martial arts specifically for Star Wars. So he goes into every movie trying to design something different and unique, which I thought was really cool when I first read it.
And like him and Wen Jiang, who plays Baze, their relationship with each other is seriously one of the best parts about the movie. Like, you don't really get to see a ton about them, but they're like the kind of character that in the comic books or in the novel, you would have been like, oh, please God, write a standalone novel about these guys. Like, 'cause I want to know more about them. And that's the thing that, you know, like I was saying, the thing that was so great about the novels is there would be like a little tiny character. Like, a really perfect example is IG-88, who's like this droid bounty hunter. And in the book that's, you know, in the expanded like Star Wars universe before it all disappeared, there was an IG-88 like novella that was about the thought processes of this droid that's a bounty hunter. And it was fantastic. And there's so many cool characters like that that you can do that with. And it's so awesome that they did that with, you know, these two characters.
Right, right, so. Right. And they're not going to make a standalone film for them. Instead, they're going to make a standalone film for somebody who was in Star Wars for 5 seconds.
Which one?
Fucking Boba Fett.
Well, yeah, but Boba Fett's awesome.
That's the weird thing is... It's funny because there's not really much to discern awesomeness from the small amount of time that he was in a movie.
So a big part of that is the comic books,
right,
and the novels and like all this other expanded universe stuff has created this mythos around,
right,
Boba Fett that unless you're like a big time fan, you probably don't know a lot about,
right,
it. But if you are a big time fan, you've read all this and seen all this and it's fucking amazing.
Well, you know, aside away from that, 'cause that was just a stupid thing, but they said – in future, because obviously, you know, I don't think we've had a chance to talk about it, what is her name? Carrie Fisher passing away. I don't know that we talked about that on the show. And there was a group of people who I don't know if it was to like push her legacy or keep her involved in the universe, that they wanted them to do to her now what they did, you know, in this movie, was to CGI her, to render her into the movie. But Lucasfilm came out and said that they weren't going to do that.
Right, which means they'll probably rewrite.
Right, because
part of the next film.
So the next film is supposedly that she filmed all of her scenes in the next film already.
Correct.
So that's done, but I assume that they're going to rewrite the ending, maybe. So we know, you almost know that she's probably going to pass away in the movie as well. So it's crazy. I'm excited to see it sucks. Cause I don't want to say that because she passed away and that's not what I mean, but and I don't know how to say it. I'm excited. I don't know if that's the right term, but I'm going to say it. I'm excited to see where it's going now that she's passed away.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know how better to say that, because now I'm sure it's changed the future movies.
For me, it's going to be interesting to see how and how her legacy is going to affect how the next couple movies are. Because if she's already shot all of her scenes, like, they're going to have to find a way to write around that.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see
what
they do with
it. That's the word I was looking for. I'm excited.
I am excited to see it because I'm just excited to see more Star Wars shit.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the casting of Woody Harrelson in the Han Solo movie?
Yes.
There's going to be some cool shit.
Donald Glover, I'm sure we talked about it a long time ago, is going to play fucking, what's his name? Lando?
Lando. Young Lando.
Yeah, I'm excited for the future. There's a lot of Star Wars stuff going on right now that I'm excited for.
And all it ever makes me want to do is read the books again, because they were so good.
I didn't even know, first off, that there were books. But I have like three of them in my book collection that I assume came from my brother. And I was like, holy shit, I have these. And I don't have any idea where they fall or if they're all standalones. So I was like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll try and collect, you know, all of the ones that I can at this point. But I don't know if they're fucking super expensive.
Holy shit, there's like 700 of them. No, they were mass market paperbacks. Right. Like, you can buy most of them on Amazon for a couple bucks. You know, you could probably get them for like your Kindle for almost nothing.
Nice.
You know, because they don't count anymore.
Right.
You
know, right. They're
not part of the canon.
Right.
But fuck if they're not amazing books. So let's see what else. I caught up on Batman and Detective Comics. At this point, I'm probably like a couple months behind again, but I made it through the Night of the Monster Men.
Yeah, because we were supposed to go to John's place.
I know. That's my fault. But I caught up on Night of the Monster Men. Like, it's good. Like, it's Batman, it's Detective Comics. It's exactly what you think it's going to be. You know, I
forget he has a standalone thing, because all I read him in is his team-up stuff.
Yeah. I love Batman, so...
I'm not a big Batman fan.
That's a weird sentence.
It's not that I'm not a big Batman fan. I'm just not as excited about him.
I can say the same thing right now. Like, I'm not super, super excited about both of the titles right now. They're good. You know, I had taken them out of my pull because I was trying to cut down my pull quite a bit. And then I put them back in because
Because you got rich again?
No, because I got caught up in it and was like, oh, these are actually pretty cool. Like, I want to read them. I'm excited about them, but it's not like so excited that it's going to be the first thing I read when I pick up my comics from John. So,
I'm so behind on The Walking Dead right now, and I really, really want to be caught up.
I do too.
Because I saw the cover and I read an article.
With Rick.
Yeah, and I read an article about how – I didn't read – it wasn't a spoiler article. I stopped at the front page because I was like, oh, what is this? Where Robert Kirkman says that he will kill Rick, and then at the end he says eventually. You know, so who knows when it'll happen, but at some point he's going to die, which I had never known that until just recently, and I don't know if he's ever said that before. But it makes sense. He's getting old. He's getting fucking beat up and beaten down. And it makes sense that he would die and somebody would take the mantle of that. But I don't know if that would affect the book going forward. You know what I mean? As far as sales and shit goes.
It'd be cool to see a power struggle between Negan and Negan and Carl for control of the group. I'd love that.
I can't wait for that show to come back.
Yeah.
Cannot wait.
I've still only seen like the first episode of the season.
Oh,
so.
Man, the mid-season finale was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch it. I'll get there. I just haven't.
Watch it, you son of a bitch.
Dude, I can't. I have to buy it. Like I have to buy it to watch it. So.
Speaking of watching things, thanks to Dom, I started watching Designated Survivor, and I caught up on it. It's in the mid season of its first season,
right?
And I really, really love it. It apparently it's having ratings issues. I don't know why or what, but
because it's a Fox show with Kiefer Sutherland, and people have seen enough of that.
24 got really good ratings, and right, it went into like its 15th season or some shit.
It had like four seasons.
24 did not. It had a lot of seasons.
It did not have that many.
I don't know if it had 15. That was an exaggeration, but it didn't have four.
I don't think it had that many seasons, man. I'm going to look it up. But
look it up.
But they're coming out with 24 Legacy. And right. Like,
and he did another show about, I don't know if it was a show or a movie, about how his kid had autism or something. And he was like a mathematician or something. It gave him like different ability. That was pretty cool, though. How many seasons of 24?
Nine.
So that's a lot of seasons.
Kind
of
in between where we both said.
It's like 9 or 10 years worth of 24. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is.
And I like Kiefer Sutherland. I don't know.
I do too, but just 24, the first like two or three seasons of it were really cool. And then I was just like, eh, I get it. Like, he's Jack Bauer, you know? He's going to do whatever the fuck he feels like doing.
I like this show. Maybe it's because we've got a new president coming in. You know, I don't know, but I love the
you're like, please let this happen.
No. I don't want anybody to die. But it's interesting because it does attack things that you wouldn't normally think of. Like, what would you do if this happened? What would, you know, the two people who survive, three, you know, later in the season are one's an independent and one's a Republican. So they're always at odds with each other. And the Republican is a career politician and he's struggling his way through it. So she's always trying to usurp him and trying to get into the presidency. It's just interesting to me. It's interesting because the plot to do...
It's funny because I'm the one that turned the heat up just now.
I had a sign...
Anyway.
Anyway.
You're talking about
24. Designated Survivor.
Same difference.
It's Kiefer Sutherland. It's about how so there's when Congress is in one place, there's one person who's away from it in case something happens. And at the first episode, somebody attacks I don't know if it was an inauguration or what, but somebody attacks the Congress building and kills everybody except for the guy and one other person. So it's all about him rebuilding government and how he was about to get fired, so he shouldn't even be president. I mean, it's a really good show. I really liked it.
Bailey's Weird Dream, but without millennials.
Yes.
You know, a safe place or like Trigger
Warning. No. I told him when she said that, I was like, I don't know if I want a bunch of millennials running the country.
You're aware that you're probably a millennial, right?
I'm at the very tail end of millennialism.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would want me running the country. That's what I'm telling you.
Good point.
Yeah, you would probably have some sort of weird mandate where everybody has to wear flip-flops.
Yeah, and a lot of people would love that idea.
Nobody would be allowed to.
Especially millennials.
It's casual weekday, dude.
Fuck yeah. Hey.
Hold on, I'm kissing your dad. Hold on, I'm kissing your dad.
Oh, you just licked my mouth. Like, not like tongue kissing. You, like, just straight licked my mouth.
Yeah. Hey, Gabe. Mel says hello.
Yeah. Okay. Will you,
I see what you did there. That's funny.
Anyway.
Designated Survivor.
It's, back to the show.
Yeah. I really like it. I recommend people watch it. It's just interesting. It's interesting to see a show about... I think VP touched on some of those things, behind-the-scenes stuff that you don't normally see, but that was a comedy, of course. Or Veep, I think it was called.
I think
called.
It said Veep, yeah.
But I like it. I've never seen 24, so.
If you like that kind of like behind the scenes Washington stuff, you'd probably really dig West Wing if you haven't watched
it. I heard that was really good too, actually. I heard it was really good.
That show's hands down one of my favorite TV shows of all time, because it's like very much so like, this is how the White House functions.
Right.
You know, and how things happen, like, you know, how the like kind of mechanics behind the White House trying to get Congress and, you know, to vote certain ways.
Right.
And are we going to push this forward? Well, we don't really have the votes for it, so let's drop it. Or let's do this for them so they'll do this for us kind of things. Really, really a cool show. So
I like Kiefer Sutherland. I like Cal Penn. He's fucking – I think he's a really good actor. And he plays the Speaker of the House at, you know, he gets to that position. He's a speechwriter at first, but
nice.
I like Cal. I like the show. I mean, it's a really good show.
I might have to check it out.
The mid-season twist was pretty cool. Cause you learn that
a twist.
Yeah. You learn that it's somebody in the White House that is, but you don't know who at this point
that caused this.
So nice. It's crazy. It's crazy to think that shit like that could happen because, you know, you have access to all of these things that normal people don't know about. You know, you know these things, and that's crazy to think about.
That's pretty cool. So, kind of in the same vein of like behind the scenes, like in a different, you know, kind of setting, I started watching the Hulu original show, The Path. The second season is going to come out on the 25th of January. My wife has been telling me, you got to watch it. You got to watch this right up your alley. And of course, she's right because she knows me really well. But it stars, Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad.
Not the main guy, but the second main guy, right?
Yeah. And it's basically he is a member of this cult called The Path, okay? They're not a cult, though. They're a movement, you know? And it has a lot to do with, you know, these interactions between these people who have either never lived outside of the cult or have lived outside of the cult, and either how they respond to the outside world because the outside world is evil to them,
right,
or how they respond to the inside world because they've come in from the outside. So there's like a character that doesn't so much believe in like the path, but she believes in the leader. And they have like this weird sexual relationship that's super, super like off the chains bizarre. Or like Aaron Paul's character, he was like a drug addict and his brother committed suicide. And then he came into the group and he's also like kind of tied up in this. There's people, they call them deniers, that are people that have been part of the path and then leave the path.
Right.
So he's connected with this girl that's a denier whose husband had quote unquote committed suicide, but she's convinced that the group killed him. And then she also stole like 40 grand from him. So they're like hunting her down. And it's just this weird, like
40 grand's not really a lot of money to hunt somebody down.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think
if you're a small like cult organization, I feel like 40 grand might be a lot of money.
I mean, it's a lot of money.
it's a really interesting thing. Like it kind of touches on a lot of the ideas of like what Scientology is like and how it affects people. Like the group has a lot of the hallmarks of Scientology, but is way more like hippie centric. You know, they smoke, how do they phrase it? Like holy herbs, which is basically just like a mix of pot and a bunch of other stuff. And like,
but they're holy.
Like, yeah, exactly. And like, they talk about the ladder, which are these different rungs, and they're the different levels that you go up.
Right.
And one of the steps of the ladder, you go to Peru and you take ayahuasca, which is like a hallucinogenic drug, and you have like this spiritual experience. And that's kind of the crux of the show.
Okay.
Is the main character, he's gone to Peru and he did that. And when he was there, he sees the leader, you know, the head, the L. Ron Hubbard character on his deathbed. And it's like fucked him up because like the person who's in charge is telling everybody, oh, he's just camping out, you know, writing the last part, quote unquote, translating the last three rungs of the ladder.
Right.
When he's not doing that, like he's about to die of pancreatic cancer. And like, there's all these like behind the scenes, you find out that the guy that quote unquote committed suicide, had reached out to like a former medical school colleague who was researching pancreatic cancer, and you're like, oh, maybe he couldn't get the cure and like all of this other stuff. You know? So it's really got that tense, you know, psychological drama thing going, but mixed up with all this weird religious cult stuff that makes it just a fascinating show. Like it's a really good show. Nice. I highly recommend it. And like all that Hulu original stuff, like Netflix makes really good like drama shows that are very much in the vein of like the stuff that HBO puts out.
Right.
Like Hulu makes shows that are like this weird mix of like HBO's level of drama and production value, but with like plot lines and writing that you don't see anywhere else. Like they're just weird, weird shows. Like it's really, I like a lot of the Hulu shows because they're just not things that you're seeing anywhere else. Like The Path couldn't exist outside of Hulu, I don't think.
Right.
Like it wouldn't succeed, I don't think, even as like an HBO show, though they did do Carnivale, which was super fucking weird.
I do like weird things. So I was on Netflix. This is a while ago, but I watched a movie called Monsters that was super awesome. Weird. But I liked the first one way better than the second one. The second one was not very good.
Right.
But it sounds like you've seen it. You know, a manned ship was coming back from Mars and it had something on it. It exploded. And now we've got these giant monster thingies. But it was less a monster movie and more like a thriller and like a drama, and it sucked me in. I was like, I don't know what this is, but it sounds cool, and I'll watch it. And it was really good. Like it's different, it's weird, and I'd never heard of it before. But it was a beautiful movie. It was really well.
I think the difference in there though is that's just like a foreign produced movie,
right?
Like as opposed to like a Netflix original. Right. Like Netflix original stuff is very. Like
no, I know it's not a Netflix show.
It's very good, but it's also very standard.
Right.
Like there's nothing so shockingly different about something on a Netflix show. Like they're like the Hulu shows are literally, here's a super fucking weird idea and we're gonna run with it. Like I was telling you before, like Shut Eye is this show about like this gang of gypsies that like have control over the fortune telling business in Los Angeles. And this guy's kind of like a con man / fortune teller. And this lady puts him under hypnosis and then he takes some serious head trauma, and the combination of the two somehow make it so that he actually can see into the future. And he starts utilizing that. And it's just such a bizarre premise, and the writing is weird, and the actors like are always like, oh, I know that guy kind of actors.
Right. Where
you've seen him in something, but you can't remember what.
Right.
Like this one has Jeffrey Donovan from the USA show with Bruce Campbell, where they're
Burn Notice.
Burn Notice, yeah. So it's like he's been in stuff for a long time, and you know him, but you don't necessarily know where you know him from. So it's just that kind of stuff that Hulu's doing that I think is really interesting.
I like weird things, so I don't know. I probably would like it.
If you want to see a cool
weird, I just don't have Hulu.
If you want to see a cool weird movie that's probably still on Netflix, there's a cartoon show called Troll Hunters, but that's not what I'm talking about. There's a Scandinavian movie called Troll Hunter that's about this dude who I think it's in Sweden. And there's like a network of like power cables that like cordon off this one area of the country.
Right.
And they keep all the trolls inside of there. And like a troll breaks out and this guy has to go hunt the troll. And that's like his job. He's like a game warden in the national parks, except for his job is to hunt trolls.
Nice.
Like
it's all right.
Super fucking cool book.
I mean, like I said, the Monsters movie was good. I would definitely, if you have Netflix, go watch it. It's a beautiful show. I like seeking out weird shit when I'm not with Alicia, because she doesn't like any of that stuff. So it's just a cool. I mean, in the second one, it becomes more of a war movie than it does where it was the first one. But there's a beautiful scene where one of the monsters is like seeding or what do they call it? She's like laying eggs almost in the desert, and it just looks beautiful. The shot looks perfect. Like, it's a really good shot.
It's a super cool looking movie. Yeah.
And like this, at the end of the first one, the same thing happens. Two monsters come together and they're illuminating and they kind of mate. And it's just a beautiful scene. It's crazy because it's not like they want to overrun everything. You know what I mean? They're just in a world where they've never been before. And that's what makes it beautiful. You know, it's not a monster movie in the sense that there's something that is wanting to kill you. It's just there. It just is like a lion or something. You know what I mean? And I love that about it. I love that movie. It was a good movie.
It was.
I told you before we went on that I've been watching a lot of TV shows, or binging a couple of TV shows, but a lot. I started watching The Blacklist, too, and that is a phenomenal show as well. James Spader is fucking awesome in that show. I'm only on the 9th or 10th episode now, and I don't know if you've seen that show, but it's about a criminal who... at the very beginning, he turns himself in. Like, he's one of America's most wanted. He's like number one or two or something like that. And he turns himself in under the guise that he has what's called a blacklist. It's a list of the most dangerous criminals that the government doesn't know about, and that he wants to tell them how to find these people. You don't know why yet. And he only wants to talk to one specific rookie cop, FBI agent. And you don't know why yet on that either. But it's just awesome. Every episode is different in the sense that it's kind of like a monster of the week, but it's like a criminal of the week.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And you get to learn a little bit more about James Spader's character's relationship with this rookie and her relationship with her husband, and there's just it's an intense show, but it's like a suspense. It's really good and it draws you in. I recommend The Blacklist. That's old too. I think it came out in 2003. But it's awesome. I just when I have a lot of downtime, though, I just seek shit out and see what works. And The Designated Survivor and Blacklist have been amazing shows for me lately.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I recommend both of them. They're really good.
I've been thinking about watching Blacklist because it looks good. Really, really good.
James Spader's a great actor, so he drew me in, and then everything kind of around him was just like, all right, this is really cool. I can get into it.
Did you ever watch that show Leverage?
I didn't.
So that show was really cool too, because it's about all these con artists,
right,
who had like come together to create like this con artist team, but they only steal from criminals to help out somebody in need.
Right.
Like, and it's this really like, you know, criminal with a heart of gold story. And I fucking love like heist movies and right. con movies. So having like a TV show that's just that shit was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So.
I'm excited for Designated Survivor comes back in March. And then I think Blacklist is done. I think it went from 03 to like 07 or something like nice. That. So I'm excited to binge my way through that.
So I read quite a few comic books. Like I said, I caught up on Batman Detective Comics. I finished Seduction of the Innocent, which came out on Dynamite. It was kind of like a murder mystery book that, you know, was couched within like the scope of like pre-code comics. You know, it was okay. Like, I like some stuff that Dynamite comes out with, but a lot of the times Dynamite kind of falls a little flat with their writing. Like, I feel like they need somebody to say, okay, you don't need quite all of this exposition. Like, you know, but that's, I mean, it's just how it is. Like, they're right. a smaller comic book company, so maybe things don't go quite as smoothly as they would like them to a lot of the time.
I feel like you should make things go more smoothly because you're a smaller comic book company.
you gotta figure a lot of those people probably have more than one job. Like, they probably don't just work for Dynamite.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Started Black Hammer. Read the first four issues of that. That's Jeff Lemire's book about the about, like, these superheroes that go... They put themselves, from what I can tell, they put themselves in like this pocket universe to protect themselves. And some of them are trying to get out, and some of them are trying to just like exist within that universe.
Okay.
So it's more like a family drama kind of thing than a superhero book. It's really, really interesting. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Sounds weird.
It is a little weird. It's interesting.
Somebody trapped them in the universe or something?
So... So the character that the book is named after, the Black Hammer, put them there because they were about to die, and he does something so that they're transported there,
right?
So that they're safe. Okay,
sounds like Doctor Who.
So like the oldest character, who's kind of like the father figure, wants them to try to live there. Yeah, I'll tell him in a second. The father figure kind of wants them to stay there because this is where they're safe.
Right.
And several of the other characters want to get out.
Right.
And then there's a character that kind of like can move back and forth between like this weird dimension called like the Pararealm, if I remember right. And it like fucks with his brain because when he goes in, it's like a psychedelic experience like every time. And, like it's a weird book, but it's really interesting. Huh. Like really well done. I really dig the art too.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like Doctor Who.
It's very, yeah, it is a little bit, but with superheroes and like Mike Mignola-esque art.
Nice,
so.
nice.
Picked up another Dynamite book, and this it's called Intertwined. It's kind of like elemental. It's kind of like Avatar, where it's like kung fu, but like there's elemental aspects to it and dragons.
The
and
Last Airbender. You're
yeah,
talking
the Last
about.
Airbender. Okay. Not the.
I had to think
movie.
About which yeah, one you were talking about.
I like it, but it suffers again from I feel like editing issues, like where there's like. So much exposition where they're telling you instead of just showing you.
Right.
Like comic books is a visual format and there's so much that you convey with like a well-drawn face or like a well-drawn like action sequence that you don't need to put into the boxes. And so sometimes when that happens, it's just like, you know, I got that. I understood, you know.
It's harder for me to get into a book that – and I think somebody on CCBE actually just said this. It's harder for me to get into a book that has poor or what I conceive as poor art and a good story than it is for me to get into a book that has really good art and a kind of weak story.
Right.
Because that's exactly what it is. It's a visual medium. So to me, it's more important that the story looks good, you know, and then I can kind of imagine what's going on if the story's not as strong. But I can't do that the other way around. You know what I mean? I can't get into it if the art's not there. Well, I might as well just be reading a book then. You know what I mean? Yeah. I might as well pick up a real book.
Which I do too.
I like well, regular. Me too. I like reading.
Read and that sucks for you. But.
I love reading. I don't have time to read. That's why I like comic books because it takes me 15 minutes, you know. But I love
Not
to
this
read.
One. This one would take you 25.
Like. I it's just a weird thing, you know. Unless it's like a Kevin Smith book that I know is going to be a shit ton of reading.
Over-wordy,
you know,
wordy.
It's
yeah.
different. It's just weird for me. The art for me has to be there, and it usually is with Kevin. I mean, you know, either way, if he's having Walt draw it for him or whatever. He's a fucking good artist.
Right. So two more. Sorry.
No, you're
no,
good.
No, three more.
No, you're good.
So
we only have one more segment left.
Zach Davison posted on like his Facebook page about a book that, you know, limited run. We only have three copies left. Pick it up right now. So I Facebook messaged him. I was like, hey, like I'd really like it. So I picked it up. It's this book called Narrow Road. He's writing it, and then a guy named Mark Morse is doing the art on it, and it's about a frog and a fox who are Buddhist monks, and they tell basically Buddhist folk tales while fighting kung fu style. Like, and it's this really cool.
They tell it while they're fighting?
Yeah, like, so the fox seems to be like the master, right?
Okay.
And so he will take the frog out to do something that ends up always – like in the two issues that I have, they both end up being object lessons where he's teaching him a lesson by, you know, having him experience this situation. Huh. So it's a cool book. It's really good. The art I really enjoy. Like I think if you just like go to Zach Davison's like Facebook, you can look to see if they still have copies of it. But
I was going to get those books that you got. Even though I don't read what he does typically, I didn't know if they were one-shots or if they were part of a different story. And that's what kind of staved me off, just because he's been on the show and I was like, oh, that'd be cool to add to the collection. But I don't think they're doing it anymore because – and I'm because I'm so cheap, I always doubt myself when I do shit like that. So I was like, I don't know if it's going to make sense to me or if I'm just going to put it on the wall or what. So I kind of tricked myself out of buying it.
Oh, it's pretty good. They were cool. Like I can show them to you later. Like I think you'd dig it. Like it's a fun book. I reread Day Tripper, which is the Fabio Moon, Gabriel Ba book. Right. That book is amazing. Like, I mean, I don't think we've ever really talked about it on the show. It's something that came out. It came out several years ago. If you haven't read it, like, I highly recommend reading it. It's just the story is about this guy. His name's, I believe you say it Brass. Like, it's, you know, it's B-R-A with an accent S. So I would assume it's Brass, okay. You know. He lives in Brazil just like they do. And each issue of it is about a day in his life when he dies. Okay. So when he's 9, when he's 22, when he's 33, when he's 38, like all these different really important days in his life. And at the end of that really important day in his life, he dies. Okay. And you get to the end and you find out that it's just kind of this meditation on what if that's, you know, what if that's how I would have died?
Right.
What if that's when I would have died? Or what if all of these are just different little universes? And in the end, he comes to the realization that he's lived this full life and it's time for him to die. Like, and it's just such a beautiful look at, like, you know, the fragility of life and what it means to, like, live your life to the fullest. And it's just so well written and so beautifully illustrated that it's just – it's very difficult to not – speak to how amazing it is. Like,
right.
It's just a brilliant book.
And Day Tripper.
Like, it's, I mean, it's one of those books. I've read it several times. Like, every time I've read it, I picked it up from the library and said to myself, I need to buy this book. And then just never bought it for some reason. I just
put it in his bowl.
Yeah, I just keep checking it out from the library. So, but it's good. It's collected in trade, obviously. I think it's like 8 issues or something like that. It came out on Vertigo, you know, so of course when I posted it, Matt was like, well, yeah, it's a Vertigo book. Like, I can think of about a dozen Vertigo books that are not good. So, but it's really a brilliant book, like totally worth reading.
Nice.
And then the last comic book that I caught up on was the final issue of Starve. Like, I finished like the final story arc of Starve.
I don't know. Can't remember if John has that in my pool anymore. I just got the first volume.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't remember if he remembered to put it in there or not. So, but it was good.
I hope so.
Yeah, it was good.
It's fucking awesome. And like the kind of the story arc that it takes is really cool because it's kind of about his daughter stepping into his place.
Oh.
And him kind of stepping back and trying to create a new American food culture, where people are harnessing like the food that's around them to make things that are fresh and wholesome and whatever. And then he's helping his daughter kind of navigate like this celebrity thing so that she doesn't get screwed and so he can get out of being in front of the camera.
Right.
And it's just really cool. And when I got to the end of it, I realized that that's like the end.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was like, Oh, I want there to be more of this. Like, I want to know more about.
No.
You know, but it's one of those really well done books that follows like a very coherent beginning, middle, and end story arc, and is done with really good writing and really like visually interesting art in such a way that it's just, I mean, start to finish is one of my favorite comic books.
We've talked to a few people now who that's the way they make comic books.
They
know how it's going to shape. They know it's going to end. And I almost feel like that's better because you have the visual of what you know. You know what you're going to do.
Exactly. You know
you don't
the
have
story
to keep
you're
thinking
write.
Of things. Yeah. Right.
You don't
that's
have
cool.
to make up new monsters for Batman to fight. You know? You can just say, This is
Batman
the whole
died.
Story.
The end.
Batman dies. The end. Which is never going to happen. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yeah. And we're done.
Like, issue 1000 of Detective Comics is Bruce Wayne dying.
Yeah. And for real this time.
For real. And it's just like, that's it.
No more Batman. No more Batman. You guys.
Or like just different Batmans. Right. But like not Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne's dead forever.
He's got to die at some point. How old is he now? Like 70?
Really kind of depends on what timeline you're looking at. He might be 1,000 years old. I mean, in Batman Beyond, he's probably like a computer or something.
He's AI.
Yeah. So, and then I have one last movie that I went to see.
No.
Yes. So my wife and I, we go to the Crest here in Greeley. They show kind of like art house films or like Oscar bait films, right. Whatever. This is the second movie I've gone to in like a few months where my wife has said, this is what we're going to go see. And I've like instantly avoided any information about it. So I knew nothing about this movie going into it again, just like I did with Moonlight, which ended up being like my favorite movie right. last year. This movie's Fences. It stars Viola Davis and Denzel Washington. And it's based on a play. So I don't know how many movies you've seen that are based on plays, but you can kind of always tell like by the way it's staged, like the way the camera is framed, the way people move around, like within the set, you can kind of always tell. So like right off the bat, I was like, oh, weird. This is like one of those play movies. Like Glengarry,
one of those play movies.
Like Glengarry Glen Ross is very much so like that. And you know, you can tell just kind of the diction that the people are using and the way they present themselves. It feels more like a play than a movie.
Right.
Well, it's the story of this guy in the 60s. He was a baseball player in the Negro League. And right after Jackie Robinson became, you know, a thing and they started allowing black players into the majors, he basically was too old. Like, he was in his mid-40s, so they just kind of retired him. Mm. So he never really got his shot, and he's kind of bitter. Kind of drinks too much, kind of angry. And it's just about like his very realistic life with his wife and his son. He's kind of abusive, but like one moment he'll be like the nicest, gentlest, funniest guy. And then the next moment he's just like exploding with anger, you know? And it's just a very.
Sounds about right for alcoholism.
Yeah. Like it's just a very interesting look at like a particular time with a particular group of people and kind of how their lives unfold over time. And it was good. It was like a really, I mean, it was interesting. It was moving. It was sad and funny and like all the things that like good entertainment should be, you know, like thought provoking.
Yeah, I'm out.
Nah. You don't like interesting things, I know.
I don't like not that I don't like it. I don't typically seek out.
I don't like thinking.
No, I don't. I know. I don't like. I go to a movie to escape shit like that. I don't like going to the theater to see something that I know I'm going to be like, oh man, that was fucked up. It was sad.
I didn't know what it was going to be.
No, I know you did. I'm just saying in general, those aren't the types of movies I like to watch.
I do like a lot of stuff like that.
I might as well just go outside and read the news or fucking look and see what's going on out in the world. You know what I mean? I'd rather go see something that's going to make me happy or excited or feel good, you know?
Right. I think kind of the way that I grew up with my dad, just let's go to the video store and rent whatever.
Right.
You know, my dad just didn't care. And I rented lots of foreign movies, lots of art house movies, you know, lots of things that, you know, end up on the Criterion Collection kind of stuff.
Right.
I like stuff like that. I like stuff that makes me think. I like stuff that, you know, inspires me to want to create my own stuff. You know, every time I see something like that, I always think, oh man, I should get back to writing, which I never do because I don't have time for it, you know. But those things, like, I really enjoy it. Like, I enjoy that it's a well-crafted story that's designed to tell a very specific part of this person's life. You know, it's towards the end of his life. Here's some of the mistakes that he made when he was young. Here's the very serious mistakes that he makes as he's older.
Right.
And this is how it's affected his family. And the wrap up to the movie is this is how his death then affects those people. You know, so you're probably never going to see it, but
no, never.
So his son wants to play football. but he doesn't want his son to play football because he doesn't want his son to suffer the same humiliation that he did.
Right.
And the way his son presents it is, you don't want me to be better than you.
Right.
And the way he feels is, I don't want those people to fuck you over like they fucked me over.
Right.
And so they have this falling out, and he kicks his son out of the house, and his son goes off to be in the Marines and doesn't come back. And then his dad dies. And so he comes back, you know, for what you think is the funeral. And he takes his mom aside and he says, I'm not going to the funeral. Like, that guy was nothing but fucking awful to me my whole life. And the thing he says is, I will only ever get one chance to tell him no, and it's right now. And she's like, that doesn't matter. Like, he raised you. He is still your dad. Like,
right.
You know, this is important not for him, but for us, like for the rest of your family. And it's like those, that kind of introspection where both viewpoints are given the exact same amount of weight,
right,
and given the exact same amount of time, where he gets to express exactly how he feels and his mother gets to express exactly how she feels and his little sister gets to tie it all together. His little sister, who's from a relationship with a different woman who died during childbirth, is totally super fucked up. But like that, and then it ties it together, and all the different characters and aspects of this guy's life come together in like this really cool moment where his brother, who in World War II had taken a severe head injury, and so through the whole movie, he kind of has schizophrenia. And he's talking about how every morning he says, good morning to St. Peter, and he wears this trumpet around his neck.
Right.
And he says, you know, eventually it'll be my time to blow the trumpet to open up the gate. And that's how the movie ends, is he blows his trumpet and he can't do it, and he tries it again, he can't do it. And he blows it, and a note comes out, and the clouds break open, the sun comes down. And it's like in that like kind of funerary moment
where
they're all talking about the death of this kid's father. Right. And it's everybody looks up at the sky like, whoa, did he like, has he not been fucking around talking to St. Peter this whole time? And then he puts the trumpet down and like in his kind of weird, like crazy mentality goes, that's how that goes, and walks off. And that's like kind of the end of the movie, you know? And it was just such a satisfying journey from beginning to end of, you get to know this person and kind of understand how they think and then see how it all ends,
right,
you know, in a really satisfying way. It's a really good movie, totally worth watching.
Nah, I'm out.
If you went to the Golden Globes, everybody called it Hidden Fences because apparently there's only like two black people movies.
Wow, okay.
No, like that was a thing. Like, people kept calling Hidden Figures Hidden Fences because there's two movies with black people in it. Like, come on, guys. Like, one of them's about NASA. One of them has Denzel Washington in it. It's like not that hard to differentiate between the two.
That's funny. I got nothing, buddy.
Nice. Want to take a break? Come back for old man?
Yeah, come back with the old man with the big balls.
Back at it again with the super swollen balls.
Okay, and that's where we'll end.
This is Arlo, Barroom Hero from Ska Brewing Company, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
This just in. We interrupt your currently scheduled podcast for an important announcement. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jimmy, and we are Meta'd Podcast, meta-analysis of everything, video games.
And not video games.
Well, primarily video game-themed podcast.
Check out our Zelda series, and stay tuned for whatever adventure comes next.
Now we return to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Government agents, scientists, soldiers, master criminals, secret formulas, monsters and midgets. Belong in this swamp. Only one thing does.
Don't stop!
The Swamp Thing.
Here comes trouble.
The Swamp Thing.
There goes the neighborhood.
Adrienne Barbeau and the Swamp Thing, an outrageous pair, in the incredible adventure that grows on you or all over you. The Adventures of the Swamp Thing. The comic book legend lives.
Sounds good.
All right.
Wake your ass up,
John. Let's
and get we're it. Back.
There we go. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. We're on our pop culture classic section, and today we're talking about 1982 Swamp Thing, directed by Wes Craven, starring Louis Jordan, Adrienne Barbeau, and Dick Durock as who has a very phallic name, I think, as Swamp Thing. Awesome. So I only pulled up two trivia things because most of the trivia was really not interesting on this movie. But Dick was the first person to play a DC superhero after Superman. So it went Superman, then Dick Durock. And then this is Wes Craven's first science fiction movie. And I think that's even debatable if it's like really a science fiction movie. It's like right. kind of like action monster movie. I don't know.
Yeah. It's really like a guy in a rubber suit movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a guy in a rubber suit movie. So John, this was your pick. So why are people booing? Juan didn't like this movie. I'm sure we'll get into that in a second.
Are you serious?
But John, this was your pick. So tell us why you love this movie. Get the fuck out of here, Juan.
First of all, Juan can pound sand. Because this movie is awesome.
I'll pound something.
I know you will. This is just.
Is that all? So
this is one amazing. Of those movies that. What?
Nothing. You're good.
What?
He's just making fun of you. Just talk over him. That's what I do.
So, this is one of those movies that I remember watching as a kid with my dad. And it went from this to, I don't know if he was a big, I don't think he was a big Swamp Thing fan. I don't know if he was a Wes Craven fan. He was a big sci-fi fan.
Your dad we're talking about.
Yeah, correct. And so, you know, I remember watching this with them as a kid and just being in awe, I guess, because I've never seen a swamp. I mean, I'm stuck here in middle of Colorado for all my life. There's not really anything swampy here at all. And I was just fucking mesmerized.
Except for my crotch in the summer.
Well, yeah. As a kid, I didn't have that problem. Not until about puberty-ish. But, you know, this turned into Swamp Thing 2, which turned into the Swamp Thing TV show, which is arguably, you know, much better than this movie is. But, and Dick Durock played Swamp Thing the whole time, which is pretty cool.
And unusual.
But I love it. I thought it was awesome, you know, you know, I didn't know anything about the Swamp Thing comics when this movie came out. I mean, shit, I was two when it – where I was one when it came out, but I didn't see it until later on. And then I was like, oh, this is based on a comic book character. I have to find these things. And, you know, so my love for all things swampy was kind of born because of this crazy B movie from back in the day.
So I remember, like, when my parents first split up, my dad moved into, like, this tiny apartment that had, like, HBO included. And this was one of the movies that was, like, in super heavy rotation on HBO.
One of those Skinamax kind of movies at the end of the night.
No.
No, it was on in the middle of the day. This movie's rated PG, dude. Like, I remember being – I was, like, 5, 6 years old or something, and my dad was just, you know – whatever, just watch whatever, I don't care. So I was kind of like you, where I was just completely fascinated by the monsters and just how weird it was. And like you, I'd never seen anything other than Colorado. And I remember, you know, there's the scene where he loses his arm and he reaches into the sunlight and he grows his arm.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that was super fucking amazing special effects when I was 5 years old.
Well, and like, you know, the Arcane giving the the biorestorative serum to the to Bruno, and then him turning into the tiny little creepy thing,
the weird
and
dwarf.
Yeah,
his clothes shrink with him.
Yeah.
But so the thing that I distinctly remember about this is there was a Swamp Thing toy, okay, yep. And you could take his arm off. And it was like some kind of like sticky substance, like on the elbow joint. And you could like take his arm off and put it back together. Like it was kind of like the He-Man slime stuff.
Right.
And I just remember I reenacted that scene where he grows his arm back like over and over and over again to the point where his arm wouldn't stick back on anymore. Because I had just gotten so much like dust and dirt and shit all over it. I just, I'm with you. This is like a part of my childhood that I love. So,
and it's one of like the longest running. I mean, because it had Swamp Thing. Like, I picked up a copy of, I don't remember if it was Back Issue Magazine or something, that was talking about Swamp Thing, you know, as a property, you know. So it had comic books, it had this movie, it had a second movie, it had like two seasons of a TV show, it had an animated series, but nobody really remembers it. Like, it's a weird cult underground kind of thing, which is just, it baffles me.
When did it come? 82?
It came out in 82, yeah.
So I was -5 years old.
God.
This is the first time I ever seen it, ever in my life.
And I was terrified by Arcane before he turned into the Wolfman thing, because he's got this skeezy, creepy Frenchman thing going on, and he lives in a plantation. And like the scene when they're all at dinner and he gives the restorative formative to Bruno, and he's got like all of these ridiculous candelabras around. It's like, that's terrifying.
It kind of reminded me of like a vampire movie almost at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It kind of looks like Dracula-ish.
Sure.
So one of the things that I love about this movie is how so out of place kind of everything is. Like, Arcane lives in a plantation that's in the swamp, but really the interior of it is like a medieval castle. And right. it's kind of like those original like Lin Wein, Bernie Wrightson Swamp Thing books where he's like, he's in the swamp and then he's randomly in Europe and then he's randomly fighting these kind of monsters and that kind of monsters, where it was always like creature of the month in like these weird locales, and it didn't make any sense like how Swamp Thing got from like place to place. Like that's how this feels. Like everything's like weird and disjointed, and like, you know, that his love interest is like a mixture of Abigail Arcane and Michael Cable. And like, it's just this weird, like, we're going to try to put every Swamp Thing plot into like an hour and a half long movie. And it sort of works good enough. Like, it's,
I mean, he rips the fucking cab off of that Bronco. That was amazing.
I think the thing that this, like, as a fan of the comic books now and as an adult, the thing that this movie suffers from is it's basically just a really long episode of The Incredible Hulk. Like, all of Swamp Thing's abilities is to, like, throw boats, you know?
Right. Oh, shit. Yeah.
You know? Exactly. And, like, he can take a bullet shot and be okay. He can regrow his arm, but, like, the actual Swamp Thing character has so much more like scope in like his powers.
Right.
Like, if you're in the middle of a swamp and dudes are attacking you and they're on boats and you're Swamp Thing, you just make vines grow up and like capture the dudes and tear their boat apart. But
yeah,
obviously,
strangle the shit out.
Yeah, obviously in 82 they couldn't make that movie.
Right.
So,
and that's what's funny, like, after seeing this again last night, like, I would love to see another live action Swamp Thing movie now.
Oh yeah.
That would be amazing.
It would be significantly better. And I feel like they could use that like mad scientist movie trope, because that's very much so what it is like a throwback to like those 50s and 60s mad scientist movies. They could use that trope and make this so much more effective by giving, you know, Swamp Thing the powers that he so richly deserves.
Sure. And I remember back in the day, the whole there was a controversy about the home video yes. release, that it was released and there was a crazy nude scene with Adrienne Barbeau and stuff, and like somebody rented it at a Blockbuster, and then
so it was released in PG. The 91 minute version was supposed to be the PG CD, the DVD. And VHS. I guess was it a VHS? I thought it was a DVD when it said it here. It might have been.
No, it was on VHS.
It was on VHS.
But I just read that this morning, and instead of doing that one, they did like a 93 or 94 minute international version. And
it has the scene where Adrienne Barbeau is bathing,
right?
And Swamp Thing is standing behind a tree, like,
titties. Dude, she had the most amazing perm. That thing was ridiculous. It looked like a helmet of hair.
It's funny. Wait,
when she was naked or the perm
on
her head?
All the time. On her head.
Top, not the bottom.
Yeah. You don't perm your bush, dude. That's weird.
I don't know what they were doing in the 80s. I wasn't born yet.
So I put this on last night after, you know, I took my son to go see Rogue One for his birthday, and then I came home and Bailey and Mel were watching like a TV show, so I had to finish letting them watch it, and so I fell asleep like towards the end of the movie because it was like fucking almost midnight, right? And so I finished watching it this morning before we started recording, because like I literally don't think I've seen this movie since I was like 6 or 7 years old. Like it's always had like kind of a soft spot in my heart, but I've never like really rewatched it, because it's one of those movies where I was afraid that if I rewatched it, I'd be like, oh, that is fucking awful.
So terrible.
But so I'm watching it, and Mel is sitting on the couch, you know, just drinking her coffee. And this is the first thing in the morning. It's like 7:30 in the morning. And she just looks at me and goes, that lady is really weird looking. I was like, right? She's not that weird looking. It's Adrienne Barbeau.
She really wasn't that bad looking.
She's famous for having giant boobs. Like, that was her job at the time.
And she took two fucking wicked karate chops to the neck during the movie. Like, I was like, we were watching it last night. I was like, holy crap, that dude just karate chopped that chick.
She put her tit in the way. Fucking.
It's so fine. My favorite thing about it is that she's actually like a tough chick. Like, she beats up a couple guys, and she like she like pulls the machine gun out on that one guy and shoots him. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. she's not a one dimensional character. She's not damsel in distress. Like, she's always fighting back.
Female badass.
Yeah. Huh.
And the little black kid was awesome. He was. He was fucking great.
So Mel, that was the other thing Mel asked me about. She's like, so is she like saving that little kid? I'm like, nah, it's an 80s movie. There just has to be a random kid in the movie to so that when kids like watch it, they can connect to like the weird random kid in the movie.
Right. Hanging out at somebody's fucking gas station, drinking Cokes. And
nah,
you guys have
you
a gun in here? Do you know where we are? Of course we do.
I just love that he knows that you have to punch the Coke machine.
Yeah.
Kicking it won't help.
Awesome.
Or when Swamp Thing heals him.
Right.
And he like squints at him and then puts on his glasses. And he's like, oh.
I think he and Arcane had the same fucking glasses too.
We're kind of low on budget, guys. I need you to use these glasses for everybody.
That was the style back in the day.
No, I don't think so. I think they had one pair of glasses.
In the swamps, it was.
In the swamps.
So the other thing I love is there's so many things about this movie that are cheesy that make it awesome. Like, it's one of those movies that's like so terrible that it's amazing.
Right.
The title card for Swamp Thing, which is clearly just somebody cutting the title off of one of the comic books and putting it into the film, so much so that like it's green with like a purple outline, and there's no outline on like the S or the T, but it's like in between the letters and on like the G and stuff like that on the outside. I was like, dude, just take like 5 minutes to like trim down the outside. Like somebody right. really dropped the ball on creating that title card. They're like, ah, we'll just photocopy this in.
And all of like the transition wipes were fucking amazing.
The down wipes and side. What?
Yeah. There was literally one that was like a Batman 66 kapow starburst that happened during the movie.
Buddy, that's all they had. Awesome. It's like Windows Movie Maker or something.
Except for it's like predates Windows Movie Maker by like 20 years.
You have like 10 of those transitions that you can use.
I wonder
if Arcane had a full-on phone in his car. Did you see that shit? He's like rotary phone in his car. That doesn't even work.
I love that.
Awesome.
I love that, like, our conceptualization of what technology was going to be like in the future in the 80s is so, like, rinky-dink and shitty. Like the computer things that he works, like, when he's doing his science-y stuff. And he turns on the one thing that has, like, kind of like a digital counter on it. And it just, like, flashes a few random numbers and then turns off. Or the sensor panel that's just like penetration.
Yeah.
Don't you have a sensor to go fix?
There was like a giant orb out in the swamp.
Yeah, that was randomly camouflaged like nobody was going to notice it.
That was nobody my other see favorite this
very
thing.
Bright thing.
All of Arcane's goons that had like fucking sticks in their hats and shit.
Yeah. And they're like literally the most out of shape like special forces unit of all time. Like some of the guys that, you know, some of the guys that die in like the initial encounter with Swamp Thing look like me. They're like, you know, fucking 300 pound dudes in like overly tight fatigues with like sticks in their hats.
It's camo, buddy. It's good camo.
It's not good camo.
Adrienne Barbeau went on to voice Catwoman in the Batman animated series, which is just a little trivia tidbit.
I like tidbits.
Yeah.
I don't have any kind of connection to this movie, so I'm viewing it purely because this is my first time I've ever watched it. So I'm viewing it purely, you know, brand new, no emotions, no nothing. And that's why I think when you guys pick some of these older movies, I probably will disagree with you in the fact that I do or don't like the movie. Because the reason you're picking the movie typically is because you've enjoyed it and you've liked it when you were little or whatever. And because I don't have that attachment, all I see is a cheesy 80s movie with a dude in a rubber suit that I thought was okay looking. I didn't really think it was that terrible. I just see like a cheesy it was an action movie to me. It was, you know what I mean? It was weird when I saw that it was a Wes Craven movie because I thought that it would be more like a darker kind of movie. You know what I mean?
So it's weird because at the beginning, it kind of has that feel. Like it has that feel of like a Wes Craven like horror movie, but it stops feeling suspenseful and like a horror movie the instant Swamp Thing becomes Swamp Thing. And it just turns into like a cheesy like monster romp. Right. And it's awesome. Like I love it because of that, because he's like this weird mix of like Frankenstein and the Hulk, and he like he just like throws people and like knocks over boats and, you know, tears the top of a Bronco off and stuff. Yeah. But there's a lot of like atmospheric moments at the very beginning, like especially when like Barbeau is running around like right after Arcane's people like attack.
Right.
And she's like, "Where is everybody?" And all of a sudden there's all her friends are dead and there's like these, you know, guys beating her and stuff like that. Like that's karate kind of like
the first karate chop
to the neck. Like there's some kind of like intense death grip. You know, suspense there. I mean, not like crazy intense because it's still pretty corny, but they drop all preludes to making it a suspenseful movie. Like the instant Swamp Thing becomes something and he's just stomping around in the swamp. Ah!
And that is literally the brightest swamp that I've ever seen. I don't know.
Shit just makes me laugh. Like towards the beginning when they're getting attacked, and I don't remember her name, but she's getting drowned in the swamp.
Yeah.
And the dude's literally not like grabbing her hair or anything. He's just kind of trying to hold her down. Like, why wouldn't you just swim away or something? Like, you just keep coming up to the same spot and keep trying to get drowned. Like, it's just swim
under the boat. Yeah.
It just made me laugh. I was like, what the fuck? But again, it's because I don't watch a ton of those kind of movies, and this is the first time watching it.
Yeah.
So it seems not so great to me. Like I said, I think the visuals for what it was at the time were okay. I don't think they were terrible for what they had. But the story and the movie as a whole just doesn't work for me. And it's because I'd never seen it. I know why.
I also think part of it is a function of them literally trying to cram every single aspect of the Swamp Thing story into one movie. Right. Like, you know, tell the Swamp Thing origin story and then have him fight Arcane.
Right.
It doesn't need to be like all the, I mean, there's just a lot going on that's like, yeah. Why is this kid here? That makes no sense. Like, right. You know, Arcane needs the notebook. Like, that's pretty good, but we don't need to see the shrinking into the dwarf and the sword and like, you know, watching Arcane turn into a weird werewolf thing like that. I don't even know where that comes from. Yeah,
and it's just shit's weird. Like they discover that they have something that, you know, what is it called, the
bio restorative.
Yeah,
and he like full on makes out with the lady. I don't know. I was like, yeah, that was kind of weird. Like I assumed that you would kiss, you know, somebody who's next to you, just, you know, like, yes, woo, we did it.
But
and then
kiss?
They start making out. Yeah. And I was like, what's going on here? Like, are they gonna have sex? Like,
and then his sister walks in, yeah, and she's like, whoa, why did you call me specifically down here for this? This is fucking weird. Hey, sis, come here.
But they're like playing with the plants, and the whole thing was silly. It was funny, and I'll give it that. It was silly, but I just couldn't get into it.
I think it's one of those movies that
awesome
does
out of the bathtub full of swamp juice.
I think it's one of those movies that's better viewed with like a group of people.
Probably.
That are like joking about it and riffing on it. And then you enjoy it for its cheesiness.
Right.
And then you also get to watch a movie that, like you said, I mean, for its time, it's not that bad. Like, it doesn't look that bad. Swamp Thing is clearly a dude in a rubber suit. Like, Arcane is clearly a guy in a werewolf hat.
I like rubber suits. I mean, I like them now. You know, they look
awkward
to me. Well, but they look better than CGIing a whole character. You know what I mean? In my opinion, most of the time,
unless you're Lucasfilm and then you can fucking pull off some crazy shit.
Yeah. But I thought it looked okay. I don't think they tried to go too crazy with the special effects. But
I don't think they could have.
Yeah.
Like, there definitely wasn't a massive budget for this movie. Like, you watch the guys in the, like, pontoon boats, the scenes where they're throwing the grenades, there are definitely three or four scenes that's the same dude throwing the same grenade, like, recycled a couple times.
Or when Alec Holland is on fire and he jumps into the swamp and there's, like, random fireworks going out of the swamp, like, minutes later.
I thought that too. I was like, it's awesome that they're just shooting fireworks. Like, there's nothing.
I was like, God damn, for a guy who is fully engulfed in flames, one, he ran really far to the swamp and fucking knew there was enough capacity in his brain to know he needed to jump in the water. I was like, fuck, he's like on fire. I would be fucking crying and laying on the ground or something.
And Abigail
Stop, drop, and roll. I mean,
Abigail has like a remarkable presence of mind to not only hide the book and lay down, but also to let a dude on fire run inches away from her without moving. like she's laying on the floor in that hallway and you can see her, and he like walks right by her and she doesn't even move.
Oh man, it was hilarious.
It was.
Yeah.
It's fun. I like it. It's still... It's one of those movies that, like I said, I watched it as a kid and I loved it, and I was afraid to rewatch it because you don't want to ruin your childhood by watching, you know, Michael Bay's Transformers movies. So why would you rewatch something that has the potential to
be
like
Transformer?
This is awful. but it's still fun. Like, it was still fun and still cheesy, and I loved it, man. It's everything I like about the early Swamp Thing comic books. Like, it doesn't have the depth and darkness and maturity that Alan Moore had. It's just a fun monsters fighting each other movie, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, I thumbs up. I loved it. Yeah. I still love it. It's it's not a great movie, but it's an awesome movie.
And how many movies do we like that?
All kinds.
All kinds of movies. I love so many movies that are just not great, but god damn it, they're awesome.
And again, that's because I think that's because we have a connect with the reason we choose these movies is because at some point in our life we've watched them and we've had some sort of connection to them, you know? And that I think has a lot to do with it. If we were to just pick a random like 80s movie that we've never seen before, we'd probably go, "Ah, this is fucking terrible."
Right.
Well, that's kind of what we did because John and I have seen it. You haven't
seen it. I've never seen it, right.
And until we started talking about it, you were like, "I hate this."
I never said I hate this.
You said those exact words to me upstairs.
I was kidding. Oh, yeah. But I don't like the movie. Like I said, it made me laugh. Certain aspects were just crazy. But as a movie, I would say don't watch it again.
Oh man, wow. I would say I'm gonna go watch Swamp Thing Returns as soon as I can.
I am right there with you, and then I'm gonna go find the Blu-ray for the TV show and watch that shit.
See, the TV show I've never seen.
I heard so much better.
But I was gonna say I heard, reviews, and I saw and I read the wiki and all that stuff, and I heard that the TV show did get much more favorable reviews than the two movies did.
Which can't be hard because on IMDb, Swamp Thing is like a 5.4 out of 10.
Right.
But I don't know if that's a product of it, like being able to slow down the story because I've never seen it, so I don't know. And kind of expanding it throughout a series rather than, like you said, trying to jumble everything into a movie.
I would assume so.
So,
well, and just the production value for the costume was better, and it was just more. I don't know. Like I love the movie, but I like the TV show that much better, and I can't wait to go find it and watch all of that now.
Is breakfast ready, Hannah? Hannah, do you want to tell us?
No.
No? Okay.
You got to go to the... Okay, so any last-minute thoughts on this amazingly awful movie?
Well, so I give it a thumbs up because I love this.
So I'll give it a thumbs down.
Thumbs up. So you're wrong.
So two to one, this movie's awesome.
two out of three fat nerds prefer Swamp Thing the movie.
Awesome.
Side note, I'm working on it, all right? I'm working on it.
On getting not fatter?
Being a fat nerd.
Oh.
He wants to be one of those skinny nerds.
Yeah,
but I won't wear those tight pants or anything like that. Yeah.
No.
I want to know if the ball incident included skinny jeans.
No, it did not.
We got to hear about that.
We do need to hear about it.
I know.
You didn't want to put it on Facebook, but we're putting it on the air.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When we come back, we'll do the first segment of the show,
we'll learn a little insight.
They're going to be like, "What are you talking about, Gabe?"
We recorded this part first because of timing.
Fucking editing, sure.
Juan's going to edit this into a different part of the show through the magic of television.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, so what are we watching next?
Well, this is your pick. Tell us what we're watching next. All right.
Well, I guess it's my pick. We're watching Cheech Marin's Born in East L.A.
So when you first said that we were going to watch this, I misunderstood and thought that you had said you had never seen it.
Ah.
I was like, "How are you allowed to be a Mexican and not have seen Born in East L.A.?" Like, I feel like that's almost illegal
because of that.
What?
I think Trump's going to deport
you. Oh, shit. Oh, no bueno.
So as a special inauguration recording, we're gonna watch Born in East L.A.
I'm going to be him in Mexico. I swear, I'm an American.
Awesome.
Answer the phone.
We kind of have a theme on this show, don't we?
What's the theme?
Well, We like movies with Cheech in them. We like horrible sci-fi / fucking horror movies. And
And Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme.
We do watch a lot of old John fucking Carpenter movies.
Yeah. I'm liking it. I'm liking what
He said that. I think it was two episodes ago. He's like, I think we're turning this into like a John Carpenter segment.
Yeah. Well, we could make it the John Carpenter, Wes Craven, Cheech Marin segment. Like,
yes. Genius.
They should all get together and make a movie.
Oh, dude, that'd be amazing. I would watch that forever. It's like Cheech on
fucking Cheech getting slashed by stoner, Freddy Krueger.
Stoner murder spree.
They live born in the swamps of East LA.
It's awesome.
I'm excited. I love the movie. So I know you've seen it. I have no idea. I'm sure John has seen it, but I have seen it. Okay. I was going to say, we don't ever talk about that stuff. So,
oh, it's such a funny movie. I own it. Like, that's how much I love that movie. It's one of the ones I own. Nice. So,
all right. Well, we'll talk about that next time. And I guess we're going to go take a break to eat. What Gabe says.
We'll take a break to go eat breakfast, and then we'll come back with the first segment of the show, and you won't even know.
Well, now you'll know.
Well, I know, but you'll hear this after.
All right.
When will then be now?
I don't know. Soon? fireworks.
Oh, man. Well, we'll be back. John, take us out.
This is Joshua Williamson, writer of Nailbiter and Birthright. You are listening to Thinking Outside the Lungs.
Here's a few reasons why you should be listening to the Unwritable Rant podcast with host Juliet Miranda. She can tell a great story.
If you can't play dead, play drunk. And it works, I swear.
She interviews celebrities that have great stories.
If we have a cousin that's kind of strange, we don't put him away or tuck him away. We set him on an old dryer out in the front yard with alcohol and let him wave at people.
right, and then you tell your friends about it.
And she's tolerant and loves kids.
So these kids go running up after the ball, and I stand up and I yell, "Kids die in the street all the time!"
So head on over to theunwritablerant.com and listen to the show.
I know, I told him to say their names, and now they're like, "This is Lindsay. Sounds good." Sorry. I had to explain to Juan, because Juan's not listening, because Juan hates me. So, all right. So, here we go.
John Bring here. This is going to be great.
Are you recording
Lindsay,
this?
Totally natural.
Oh, man. You've got to put this in the show somewhere, because this is some of the best. All right. Oh, all right, here we go. I'm going to try not to laugh through the whole intro. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, we have the creative team of Penguins versus Possums, which is coming out on Fanbase Press. Guys, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves and tell us what you do on the comic.
Sure. Sebastian here. I'm Sebastian, and I'm the creator. I'm one of the writers, one of the illustrators, and the letterer.
Nice.
John Bring. I'm also a writer, illustrator, and I do the grayscales for it, and probably other things that I'm not thinking about right now.
Lindsay Calhoun Bring here, and I'm just a writer. Writer on the book.
Not just a writer. Writer is like an integral part. Like, without the just a writer, there is no comic book. So
right.
Yeah. So say writer extraordinaire, maybe.
That works.
So we like to start off all of our interviews with the same basic question. What is the origin story of X Project? So let us know. What is the origin story of Penguins versus Possums?
Sure. Sebastian. Yep, Sebastian here. it started when I was in college. I was in this class called Art in the Digital Age, and we had to create a website for our final project. And the teacher had encouraged me to include a lot of drawings and art and comic book type art. And from just a lot of nights of letting my imagination go crazy and pounding those Mountain Dews,
Is that a euphemism?
Whatever gets it done.
Is that a euphemism?
um, So how do I follow that? So I had a character in high school that was a penguin with Oakley sunglasses and spiked hair at first. And so I kind of incorporated that idea and had a bunch of possums in my backyard. Not a bunch. It's not like there was a ton, but had the occasional possum in my backyard. And it just seemed ridiculous, the idea of penguins and possums fighting each other since the beginning of time. So I thought, why not? Why not make a mythology about that and include stuff that I liked, like Indiana Jones and just the idea that there were secrets hidden below the surface and we need but discover the clues and put everything together. And the idea of humans having to choose sides, it all just was stuff that I thought was fun, along with 80s action movies and whatnot. And so it started there, and then it was kind of dormant for a while. And then when I came to L.A., the only other thing I did with it was really make some t-shirts and stuff. I got into spray painting and stenciling and making t-shirts. And that's really where Choose a Side, I really was pushing it, trying to get people to buy either a penguin shirt or a possum shirt. And then it was dormant again. And until I started working on a TV show, and I was working in the bullpen. And as fate would have it, the person sitting next to me was John Bring. And yes. I'll hand it over to you there, John.
Okay, this is John. Yes, the sweet hand of fate brought Sebastian and I together. We sat next to each other.
A euphemism?
No.
We sat next together, next to each other at a like he said, in a bullpen as we worked on a television show. We became fast friends.
Sandbox
When we realized we both drew, and we both used to make comics, and soon enough we were drawing a webcomic together. Started out as just the two of us fighting each other, which we drew on post-it notes, by the way. It kind of became an office phenomenon, and ultimately Sebastian had shown me the website, the Penguins vs. Possums website. I thought it was fun, so I decided to include in our little comic we were doing a reference to Penguins vs. Possums by using the penguin character. And then had so much fun drawing the character. I feel like it was me who eventually proposed we do a similar post-it comic, but Penguins versus Possums. Yeah. And it kind of grew from there. We did that for a little while, and soon enough, we had ourselves booked to do the Long Beach Comic Con out here. We had a table, but we had nothing to sell. And we got together and said, like, well, why don't we do a comic? Neither of us had ever – we'd done comics as kids, but we had never actually published anything. So we said to ourselves, let's crank something out. And that's not a euphemism. let's do something to have for this convention. And that would ultimately become Penguins versus Possums. We did it for the issue number one with no – real plans of continuing it, though we of course have plenty of stories we wanted to tell with it, and but we did the one issue, and it sold like hotcakes, so we got excited. And in all this process, during the creation of issue number one, is when Lindsay came in. She was I feel like Lindsay really rounded out the writing of the writing style of it, the sort of like, she brings a lot of humor to the book, and kind of helps both of us. It's always good to have a third voice anyway, and I feel like it just helped round out everything, all the voices of the characters helped round out the book. And as the book went on, it just got better and better. And if I do say so myself, and we all got stronger as a team. And 5 years later, we've put out our final issue.
So. In creating like basically like a like an 8-issue story arc, do you feel like you were able to like get the full story out that you wanted, or is this something that you may revisit, you know, in the future, or, you know, how do you feel about where you've kind of ended your book?
I think I'll speak for us bros. I think we definitely have an ending to our story. We always knew that we wanted there to be a clear winner, and there is. That's something that we didn't want to back off on. We love the story. We feel really satisfied with the full arc of it. We always say, of course, because we loved working together and loved doing this so much, that if ever there was a reason to expand this universe or to go forward, that reason being Mad Cash, we would. And also just love this. We would, of course, I think we could like expand the universe. We definitely stayed and we stayed with sort of the same characters throughout, but we know that there are many penguins and possums throughout the world who are going to be in this fight. And now that humans are involved in our story as well and are an integral part, there are places to go. But for this particular story, we really, I think, crafted a beginning, middle, and end that we all feel really good about. So if this is it, like Huey Lewis in the news say, then we'll be really happy with it.
So I saw your ad for the toys, the 80s ad for the toys, which was the best, by the way. And like I saw,
thank you.
You know, it's a pretty family or like age, you know, kind of neutral comic book. Like I feel like a kid could read it without like any problems, you know. And then you also did like the coloring book covers. Do you feel like this is something, you know, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, would you prefer people buy the coloring book covers to collect them or to color them in? Like, do you feel like this is more geared towards like a kid's audience or like a collector's audience?
Well, John here. I think for me, I don't think we necessarily – I mean, I think kids could read this book for sure. I mean, there are definitely some more mature themes here and there, and there's a lot of violence, which may make certain parents skittish. But in terms of the coloring book, that's definitely something where – I mean, obviously, if you want to collect it, great. But, like, I think I would derive no more the most pleasure out of somebody actually taking it and coloring it. I think that's – like the idea that somebody would take the time to actually do that is probably way more fun to me than somebody, you know, putting it off and locking it away in some sort of vault. Just because if you are taking the time to color it, I feel like you have some sort of passion for it. And sure, coloring books are traditionally for kids, but I think this coloring the coloring book cover movement is more of is for adults, really.
I don't interrupt you. I actually at work I color in color books a lot. It's sort of a de-stressing thing, something that I really like. But I think yeah, for what you were saying, and I hope for Sebastian too, I don't think any of us were specifically catering this towards children as much as just saying, right, like, oh, this is great. This is something that might just add a little extra joy to somebody when they get the book, as, you know, we feel like the book already stands on its own, but to have this extra fun element is something that we would hope that you would use and hope that you would do. But of course, you know, to each his own. If you want to collect, great, but it's a waste of a coloring book cover, I say.
Sure. I think probably, Sebastian here, probably the best option for everybody would be to buy the original cover, buy one coloring book cover to save and one coloring book cover to color. That's probably just the best thing.
And then an additional 5 to 10 issues.
Just to hand out to people. And
And like door stoppers.
They make great gifts, great stocking stuffers. I know Christmas just passed and Hanukkah.
You got to get ready.
But you got to be ready for next year.
I was telling my wife, you know, her birthday is in February. And she was like, you know, for my birthday, I want these two things and blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to get them for me. I was like, you know, literally every day in the United States is a holiday. you could just say, hey, it's National Pancake Day. I'm going to get these gym shorts for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
True that. So, P.S. If her birthday is in February, the eighth issue cover, the background is red. So it makes a great Valentine's Day gift. just letting you know.
Mine's in February too, and I would like everyone to buy me 5 issues of each.
And you're comfortable with it on Comixology, so nobody has to have them even stacked around. So
exactly,
right?
Yeah, dollar man.
When you're looking at, you know, the comic book and you have, you know, your alternate covers and, you know, your regular covers and stuff like that, how do you feel the Comixology aspect of it works into that? Do you, Do you see more people reading it, you know, in a digital format, or more people buying it physically at like cons and things that you go to? Like, what's driving it the most, do you think?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I would say for us, it's always been, I think, the cons, because specifically, that's just a chance to actually talk to people about it, you know, and get people excited about it. We're lucky. John and Sebastian are such, I think, great artists that a lot of the times the covers would always grab people when they walk by the color, the covers, and of course the title. But for spreading the word and for getting people excited, it's always been the cons. We've done countless cons together. We have so much fun doing them. And we are definitely not shy to grab a group of people that have that are trying to walk past us that have never heard about it, just to chat and get them excited. And then if they leave with the book, then our biggest compliment, the thing that we've noticed that we love, is, you know, one con will meet someone who had no interest in the book before, they bought it, and then the next time they're actually looking for us at the next con to get the next issue.
That's cool.
That's been the coolest part, I think.
Yeah, it's cons, as she was saying, is definitely our bread and butter. And it's a hard, we find that that's the way to go. I mean, I think with most independent comics, unless you're incredibly lucky, just because there's so much
out there,
out there, especially if you go to Comixology and just click on, like, you know, if you just try to look something up, I mean, just to randomly find something, it's hard to wade through it all. So I think that, and I personally, this is John, by the way, and I personally feel, and I'm sure Sebastian would agree, and I know Lindsay agrees, that just like the personal connection at the cons is what I find most special, is, you know, like Lindsay said, being able to talk to somebody and get them excited about it. So obviously, like, if somebody discovers it on Comixology, great, but there's nothing quite like meeting somebody face-to-face and having them get excited about your book, and I don't know, that's what always stays with me.
Or same, and now that we're with fam, because we self-published for a while, so we did all the tables on our own. And now that we're with Fanbase, it's more of a, they'll schedule us to come in and have shorter bursts at the table. But what's great about that, too, is that, you know, people that we haven't met will have found the book through them or other cons, and then they'll be excited to specifically come and talk with us about it for the time that we're there, which is really awesome. And that's the thing you can't really get. I guess you could get that online through social media communication, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
But at the, on that same token, I think that meeting people in person and getting the word out there and physically, you know, tangibly letting people hold and see that book, it gets people excited to actually go online and look for the book and look for the continuing issues. And that's something that's really great about Comixology as well, being able to say we have it digitally. I know a lot of people are going that way now with comics, just in terms of space. So I'm glad that we have it there.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel like Penguins versus Possums fits into like the broader scope of like animal action comic books, like, you know, books like TMNT or like Usagi Yojimbo, you know, or like, where do you, on the spectrum of like kind of funny versus actiony, like, where do you guys feel, you know, you kind of fit into that genre? Cause I feel like that's a genre of comic books, is like this anthropomorphized animals fighting each other thing.
Sebastian here, probably right in the sweet spot is where we live.
Right in the perfect spot.
Yeah. the Goldilocks zone. That's pretty much where we are.
the porridge that's just right.
You're like a planet that could possibly support life. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Like when you,
so we flourish.
We support funny animals who are action stars.
So I was watching. I was watching a review that a guy had posted on YouTube of the book, and I thought it was really interesting. He brought up a really fair point that I found fascinating. He said, "So penguins come from, like, you know, the Arctic Circle or Antarctic Circle, whichever one it is. I can never remember." And possums come from, like, kind of near the equator. Like, how is it precisely that they came to fight each other in the first place?
Sebastian here. So the fight's been going on for so long. It's an eternal struggle back to the days of Pangaea, when it was one supercontinent and they were neighbors. And they have not let it go. And as in issue one, we actually also start in the San Diego Zoo. So the penguins are there and the possums are infiltrating. Right. But in the larger scheme of things, in the grand scope of this, it's been going on since for so long that they were, in fact, neighbors at one point. And even moving away from each other hasn't been enough.
That's awesome. I like that.
Yeah. Boom.
Yeah, so, that's history.
We use real science.
Yeah.
When
thanks for trying to stump us, though.
Yeah. You guys clearly have like a good rapport working with each other. Like, you've come up with this awesome, you know, 8-issue story arc of like this ridiculous idea that seems to like actually really work. But have you guys thought about what's next? Like, are you going to work on a new project together, or, you know, do you have individual projects that you guys are working on?
Well, Seb, as you know, Seb has Kinsei, which we're super, super excited about for him.
Doesn't that come out tomorrow?
Yeah.
Or today?
Today, yeah.
Today.
It's Kinsei Day.
Tomorrow is today.
So everyone should check out Kinsei.
Which is awesome. I got to read that.
Or Quince.
Or Quince.
I think I had to ask that question. How do I say this so I don't sound like the whitest Mexican of all times?
And then on the sorry, Seb, I think you probably have a lot more projects going on art-wise and comic book-wise than we do. Not to put you on the spot, but are you working on anything else?
No, well, Kinsei is a big thing, so everybody please check out Kinsei on Comixology or go to kinseicomic.com.
And go back into our archives and listen to the amazing interview we did with the creative team from Kinsei, because that was also hilarious.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Please check that out as well. As far as other projects go that I'm currently working on, I'm trying to catch up on commissions that I did not do while we were working on issue 8 of Penguins versus Possums. So I have a couple more of those to do. And then I'm always like writing stuff. I think we all are always just like writing stuff that we want to work on. But that's pretty much it for me. For the second part of the question, I do hope that the three of us can work together again.
Yeah.
So obviously love these guys, and hopefully it's reciprocated. And hopefully there's something soon. I know that we've talked about, we did this project called Crossover that was like superheroes that we had created when we were kids, and then we revisited them as adults and shared superheroes and stuff, and we did one issue of that, and we had one person that kept asking us about it, about the next issue. And I feel like that's something that's still on our plates to maybe finish one day. Beyond that, if a project arose where the three of us could work on, I would absolutely, absolutely love to do it, whether it's comics or otherwise.
Yeah,
definitely.
John here. I would work with these two till my dying breath, because it's
that's
honestly
gonna be any second now.
It is.
I'm gonna kill you.
Great, because it's just, you know, obviously I'm married to Lindsay, but and Sebastian's one of my best friends, and it's just like it's just like a great working environment. So I mean, I would work to these guys till the end of the earth, which may happen January 20th. But anyway.
I mean, we probably got like a week after that or so.
I don't think so.
I don't know if we're going to make it that far, man. but no, not to get political. But anyway,
no, that's fine.
Yes, as Sebastian said, I would love to finish Crossover. That was a really fun project. I've had a book rumbling in my an all ages secret agent type book rumbling in my head for years that always kind of got put on the side because I wanted to focus on PvP and other projects. And then just in my regular profession, my quote-unquote day job, I'm currently writing an episode of Supernatural, the TV show on CW. So look out for that. I think it
– April?
Yeah, April 18th I think is when it debuts. So.
I cannot wait to tell my daughter that I talked to somebody that is even participated closely in Supernatural. She's going to shit her pants.
I was like bragging on John's eye, but John co-wrote an episode last season, the wrestling episode. I don't know if your daughter's up to date, but
she is. I'll tell her.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'll be doing episode 18 this year. In fact, as soon as we get done with this, I got to go to my office and write. But no, I'm doing that. But I mean, I definitely have my eye on what Sebastian and Lindsay and I are all going to do next, and I can't wait. It'll be super fun, and we love doing comics together. So
yeah,
we
love doing the comic, but we're all, I think, just creative people and a well-working team as well. And John and I are obviously writers. Sebastian's a very talented actor. I don't know if you knew that, but we've talked about even just working on some film projects together, just because we enjoy working together so much, and it's a friendship thing, and it's sort of like our version of going out to a bar and getting a drink is sitting together at Sebastian's table in his apartment and working on things.
That's awesome. That's what this podcast is for me. Like, I don't go out and drink. I just hang out with my friends and do this shit.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what we need.
That's awesome. Well, guys, tell everybody how we can get a hold of Penguins versus Possums and find out about it on the internet and read this amazing comic book about the eternal war between the penguins and the possums.
Sebastian.
Yeah, you can find us online at penguinsversuspossums.com. That's penguinsvspossums.com. You can also find us at fanbasepress.com. Please check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/penguinsvspossums. We always update on what's going on with us, what conventions we're at, any sort of new stuff. I mean, there won't be very many new issues coming out, but any sort of appearances that we have, and we love talking to people at conventions. So if we're going to be in your area or if you're going to be in ours, the best place to find out about all that stuff is on our Facebook page. And then we're also on Twitter and Instagram, and the handle is @PVPComic.
Nice. Very cool. Well, everybody. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Juan was talking to me.
Juan!
I know, right? Juan. God, Juan. thank you so much for being on our show again, Sebastian, and for you, John, and Lindsay for the first time. You know, any other projects you guys have, please come on again. We'd love to have you on again because it's always nice to talk to people that are funny.
We'd love to. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Lindsay, thanks.
John here. I appreciate it.
Sebastian here.
Lindsay.
That's awesome.
We're Penguins versus Possums.
And you're listening to
Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Yay!
Hey, podcast nerds. Obviously, you are smart enough to like these guys. I think you'll probably dig The Baboon Room. We have interviews ranging from a Vice.com Middle East embedded journo telling tales about when she got arrested during the Turkish coup to Singularity One-on-One Socrates doing this.
Hey, guys. This is Socrates from the Singularity One-on-One, and you're watching The Baboon Room.
And sometimes the voice of God drops in, and apparently,
you know, I'm telling you, God really knows his shit.
And sometimes we just nerd out hardcore about the EM drive and AI and Bitcoin and universal basic income and other cool shit. Search Baboon Room wherever you get your podcasts, or just head to baboonroom.com. Cheers.
All right. Listener feedback.
Listener feedback. So first, let's we're going to read a couple comments from our pop culture classic Swamp Thing. Rio Herrera said, as a kid watching it, I loved it. As an adult, having watched it a few times, I am way too critical about the low budget production. But nevertheless, it is still a Swamp Thing movie. Smiley face. Thumbs up, thumbs up. Those are emojis. Nice.
So now he thinks it sucks too.
Yeah. And then Sean Hart Spadell said, love it, period. The sequel and the TV series too. So I feel like that's four thumbs up versus one thumbs up now.
One thumbs down.
Well, no, I'm counting. I'm just saying Rio's thumbs up emojis.
Oh. Yeah.
So now we're going to listen to a.
What?
What? Good talk.
You keep cutting in and out on me.
Uh-oh.
There?
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you sure?
Hold on.
I'll call you right back.
So while he's calling him right back, we're going to listen to a voicemail from Michael Kirk.
And you'll hear that here.
So it's your only caller, Mike Kirk again. I wanted to make a change to my end-of-the-year picks for favorite TV show. I originally picked Stranger Things. I'm actually going to switch it to The Man in High Castle Season 2. Because it was an amazing season. I'm not sure if you guys have watched this show yet. It's one of those weird shows that's hard to describe, but it is fucking amazing. Rufus Sewell plays like a Nazi in America, and he's really, really good. Essentially, the story is it takes place in an alternate reality where the Nazis drop the A-bomb on Washington, D.C., and they control most of the United States, with Japan controlling only like the West Coast, so like California, Oregon, Washington, but I mean, they pretty much control the world. The thing is, there's these films that kind of show our normal reality at the same time, so it gets a little crazy with that, but that's not the most interesting thing about it. The thing to me is the actual family dynamic of the show. So you follow around Agent Smith, Open Grouper Fuhrer Smith, who's the main Nazi in the U.S., and you follow his family. And then there's a trade minister for Japan. You kind of follow him. And just all those dynamics is just really, really good. Like, the first season, I was like, oh, man, what's going on with all the different realities? This season, I was like, fuck the different realities. What the hell is going on in this reality alone? It's a really, really fucking amazing show. So I recommend it to everybody. That's going to be my TV show of the year. You guys have a good one.
Yeah. Holy shit. I just finished the 18-hour epic year-end review, Thinking Outside the Long Box episode. Almost as long as Lawrence of Arabia, but I can tell you I enjoyed every single minute of it. Good to hear all the different recommendations. Pretty funny shit going on there. Enjoyed the interviews. One thing, when Juan was talking about Ash versus the Evil Dead comics, I'm not sure if you've watched the show. It is phenomenal. It's so fucking funny. It's just right in the vein of Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness. Highly recommend that show. Also, I know this is way late because we were doing the Bloodsport pop culture classic a little while ago. However, the other night I checked out a show called Jean-Claude Van Damme Johnson on Amazon. It's a half-an-hour pilot. Freaking hysterical. You guys definitely got to check that one out for sure. It's right up everybody's alley. And I would like to hear John, I'm not sure if he's reading it yet or if you guys are reading it yet, Green Valley by Max Landis. You guys need to be reading it. It's extremely, extremely entertaining. It's fucking crazy. It's a really, really good book. It's not quite up there, Seven to Eternity, but I'm enjoying it a lot. Definitely a good book. Out and Westworld to get all caught up on that show because I binge watched that over a weekend. That show's fucking amazing. Every part of it, just holy shit. The final episode, you're just like, what the fuck? It is a great show. Plus, there's lots of titties in it. Once there's titties in it, you can't go wrong with that. So, all right, guys. Well, you have a good one. Talk to you later.
Hello?
Are you there, sir?
Cool.
So we just listened to a voicemail from Michael Kirk. Your review of Man in the High Castle, Michael, is probably why I'm going to watch it. Like, I've been intending to watch it for a little while and just haven't gone around to it. So I'll be sure to check it out. Thank you for telling us that you absolutely demand we change your top pick of TV show from 2016 to Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, I'm assuming John hasn't seen it.
I have not seen it.
It's an Amazon Prime show.
I did not know that.
I think it's kind of flying under everybody's radar.
Side note, we have one Instagram feedback from CJ Tattoo about your Swamp Thing thing.
Who is a tattoo artist in China.
And it says, holy moly. That's all.
Nice.
Now I'm scared that John's not hearing us.
No, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. John, what's your old man pick?
Well, so first, hold on. We need to address, we've talked about it on several occasions, but Mike Kirk has left us a voicemail asking us to talk about midget porn. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Every time he comes into the store, he's like, how come you guys haven't talked about it? It's fucking creepy and none of us watch midget.
So I'm curious if he's talking about midget porn like only midgets who do porn or like a regular sized guy with a midget lady
or vice versa.
About two, because I don't know all the throwdown. I don't know all the vernacular surrounding midget porn. If it's like little people, big people, or if it's like little people, or if it's
little people, big penis.
Right.
That's a good title of a porn.
I'm guessing that's the title of a porn. I'm going to go look right now.
But I just thought that was I think we needed to bring that up before.
I feel like he's obsessed.
It sounds like it. I mean so one time I bought some porn eBay or DVDs off of eBay, which is a bad idea. Yeah. Don't ever do that, anybody, because it was like
It was like $12 for like 84 hours of porn. And I was like, how is that a bad thing? It was horrible. and so there was like, there was like old people and there was like midgets and it was terrible. And then, so of course we got it. We had a bunch of friends over. We're like, let's watch this 84 hours of porn. And it was just like a train wreck, man. You couldn't look away. And so that's how I feel that midget porn probably would be.
And you bought it off really of eBay. So I don't know if it's like used.
What do you mean used?
Well, like somebody watched it before you and did their thing and then sold it on eBay.
Well, I mean, it was that.
You're cutting out so bad right now for some reason.
Advertising crap machine, but
amazing.
It was only watched. Is it his real title?
No, it's not. I could not find one called that, and it totally should be. So, all right, hit us with your old man pick, John, and we promise, Michael, we'll come back at you next episode with a in-depth discussion
of midget porn.
So my old man pick are like action figures from back in my day when I was a kid, because now I've got a son who's 3 and he's all into everything, Star Wars and Ninja Turtles and fucking everything. So we go to the grocery store, Target, and you buy Marvel Legends action figure, and it's like $18 to start, and it's just a piece of crap. I remember back in my day when I was a kid buying the Star Wars action figures that had like 4 points of articulation, but they were amazing. You can get into the crazy high end action figure market and spend sky's the fucking limit for like some of these sideshow things, which are really cool, but nobody has a collection of that stuff. It's kind of like the omnibus thing that we talked about many moons ago. And so Funko kind of brought some of that stuff back with their reaction figures, which were totally like just absolute garbage. That's what your Karate Kid figure is, or your Karate Kid action figure is, Juan.
Nice.
It's the Funko reaction things, and it's supposed to be like a throwback to action figures from the, I guess, early 80s, because that's when action figures really became a thing, the little 3 3/4 ones.
Nice. My son's got a little G.I. Joe that somebody just bought him with an airplane set. That's pretty cool. But I would agree, a lot of there's not a lot of action figures anymore, period. And there's not a lot that have a lot of articulation, a lot of movement in them. Maybe it's their arms kind of swing back and forth and that's it.
But that's
in the elbow, nothing in the fingers.
See, but that's what I loved. I loved like He-Man, like his elbows and knees didn't bend.
I have a He-Man and with a rubber head.
Yeah, I loved He-Man because mostly I loved like the little weapons. Like I was obsessed with like having the little guns and all the different stuff. I would buy G.I. Joes. Like I would look in the blister pack and like count which guys had the most like accessories and buy that one. So I was getting like the most bang for my buck out of a G.I. Joe figure. I don't know. I'm with John. I miss that. Like I miss that toys were used to be like that, where you had a box that was just full of your G.I. Joes and like maybe a few vehicles, and you could have these little wars with all of your G.I. Joe guys. Whereas now, toys are ridiculously expensive. Like I don't know anybody that is buying their kids like all of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle characters kind of thing. So I don't know. I miss that too.
And then the skeletal rubber band system would break, and you would just have like a lump of body.
They'd be all floppy.
I know that.
Or the foot hole for the peg was like just a little too small, and you couldn't get him to stand on like any of your stuff, and it was super annoying.
I know that one of the ties, or both of the ties, I know that they collect those. I don't think they're action figures, though. I think they're just things that can be moved. You were going to buy one of them at, I don't know if you did, at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, so there's a toy manufacturer that's called 3A, and it's part of Ashley Woods, which is a guy who's an Australian, and he makes these like super detailed, but I don't know how to describe them. They're very detailed, they're very articulated, but they're not really action figure-y. They're like an impressionist action figure, if that makes sense, because proportions are always generally distorted. Legs are longer, you know, torsos are wider. They're really cool. They're just, you know, they're very specific in what they are.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know if they were considered like action figures or if like everyone was different and that's why the Ties collected them. I didn't really understand that. But they looked cool. The one that you were going to buy or bought at San Diego looked cool.
Oh, I'm looking at pictures of them online. Those are super cool looking. They're weird. They're weird little toys. I like them.
Oh no, I'll have to look them up.
Yeah, so they've done some Star Wars ones. They've done some Marvel characters. There's a Spider-Man. I think that there's an Iron Man. They're really cool. They're just, you know, they're like $300 a pop.
Woo.
For this crazy articulated artistic action figure. And I don't know. That's cool. I mean, to each their own. That's just not my thing. Give me my Kenner 3¾-inch, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi that has two moving arms and two moving legs, and that's cool.
And a plastic robe.
Yeah. And a lightsaber that's really in his forearm that you can extend, and then it comes out.
That's awesome.
That's my old man. And it's funny being on this side of the counter because I have a guy who's a hardcore toy guy. Like, he gets Hobby Japan magazine, and he always orders like these $300 and $400 model kits and stuff. And it's neat. It's funny to see the different things that people spend their money on. Cause I spend my money on expensive comics, and I, you know, that action figure guy probably is like, what is this dude doing buying paper?
Right. He's all, I want that cool Gundam model.
I'm not going to lie. I've never spent $300 or $400 on a toy or a comic book.
Oh man.
But that's my old man pick is like old school action figures. Nice. That just aren't really a thing except for the reaction stuff.
I'm glad the thing you gave me you consider trash, so.
Well, that's why I gave it to you. So
watching Star Wars with Ashen yesterday, I made a comment and I had posted an Instagram picture similar to this that K2SO is a leaf on the wind, right? Because it's played by Alan Tudyk, who's in Firefly as Wash famously. And Ashton didn't really get what I was talking about because he's never seen Firefly. Like, he's never sat down and watched it. And so my old man pick, and I don't really think it's that old of a pick, but
it kind
of
is.
Firefly is like the single best season of television that I think I've ever seen. Like, and there's always like this, oh, let's do a, you know, a Firefly animated series. Let's get a second season. Let's do this. Let's do that. I really feel like it's so great on its own as it is now that at this point there would be so much hype behind a second season that there's no way it could ever be as good or better than the first season. And as a consequence, I feel like Firefly, Serenity, and then the comic universe that they've created around it is just perfect the way it is, and I love it, and it's one of my favorite things of all time, and I can't wait to have the opportunity now to sit down and introduce Ashton to it because he's never seen it, and it's such a good show. Like, it's so cool from beginning to end, and the fact that Juan hasn't seen it, like, you need to do that. You should spend the next like month and a half or something. I know the whole thing's on Netflix. Watch Firefly, watch Serenity, and then we'll do it as one of our pop culture classics. Like, spend a little bit watching it because
absolutely needs to be one for sure.
I mean, it's as though there were a Han Solo TV show. Like, I mean, it is like the coolest things about Star Wars and Han Solo's character and like this kind of like roguish, you know, corruptible but heart of gold criminal kind of guy. But a whole series, like a whole TV show, a whole movie, a whole series of comic books. I feel like you're going to watch it and be like, that's the best thing. Why haven't I seen that yet?
So, there's a lot of those things.
I know. But this one is going to be like the one where you're like, I should have watched that years ago.
Chris has a huge crush on Nathan Fillion. So she just goes, I'd watch that.
Nice.
Well, maybe I'll have to try and get him on.
Oh, that would be amazing.
That show's 15 years old.
It's how old?
It's 15 years old.
Wow. Yeah,
sounds about right.
So yeah. I was 15 when it first came out.
Yeah.
But when it first came out, you would have seen it on Fox and been like, this is garbage, because they played it like they played it all out of order, and like it was super confusing, and people were like, what's going on right now? And that's why it got canceled, is because Fox fucked it up. Like, and then in retrospect, it gets like a DVD release. Everybody watches it and is like, why isn't there a second season of this? You know, it's one of the sad, sad stories in Hollywood history. Like, I feel like it would have been really good, like, for about 3 or 4 seasons.
Nice.
You know.
I can dig it.
So, but that was my old man pick.
Nice. Firefly. What's Serenity? Is that?
So Serenity is a movie that takes place after the season of Firefly.
Okay.
And it's basically happened because of the fans. Like, the fans wanted a second season or something, anything to wrap up the story so bad that Joss Whedon produced and made this movie that was kind of meant to be like the final episode effectively of Firefly. And then when that was done, everybody's like, oh my God, we want more. Like, why are you prick tease? So
cool.
It's phenomenal. John agrees with me. You should seriously spend the next like month or so watching it so that we can
do my best.
I bet, like, I know Alicia isn't really into like different stuff like that, but I bet Alicia would like it because it's more of an action-y show that happens to take place in space.
Right.
And it's funny as shit.
Nice. All right.
Like, and it's just good. It's just a good TV show.
We need something to watch together.
She likes Doctor Who, right?
Yeah, she watches Doctor Who.
She probably liked Firefly quite a bit.
We finished something. I can't remember what it was, and we're like, God, what do we watch now? And that's how I got into Designated Survivor and Blacklist, because I was like, I need something to watch.
Right. Nice.
I think John's gone again. Son of a bitch. I hate you.
That's okay. So
we're done.
We're done.
We're done.
Let's wrap up the show.
I'm here, but I'm not here.
Yeah. Gonna wrap up the show, John, so you know you're good. You can go back to work.
This is episode 54, I believe.
No, it is
54 or 55.
It is. Oh yeah, you were right. It's episode 54. Sorry. No, I thought I had written down 53. So anyway,
so we're 46 episodes away from brand new tattoos.
Yeah. My wife is not thrilled about me getting a Thinking Outside the Long Box tattoo, but it's happening.
You gotta get your death
metal connection. This is going to be a big
tattoo. 2.5 years from now.
Is it going
to
be a little
heart? I think I want to get the little brain logo.
I think so too.
Like the Isaac did for us.
I think Isaac did a good job with that.
Yeah, me too. So with that said, this has been episode 54 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. If you would like to participate with us in the conversation, for the love of God, please do, so that Michael Kirk doesn't feel so sad and alone. You can visit
us. So he's not masturbating with his tears?
I know.
When we talk about Johnny.
Yeah. Oh, man. You can visit us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find all of those things at our website, which is at www.totlb.com. That'll direct you to all of our social media. You can literally talk to us whenever you want on that. We almost always reply to everything that anybody says to us. We reply to comments. I take care of the Instagram. Juan largely takes care of the Twitter and Facebook. So if you want to talk to just
largely
Juan.
Largely because I'm fat or what?
No. I do a little bit on Facebook. Just a little bit. But yes.
We're not there yet.
You can find us at www.totlb.com, or you can help fund the show by visiting our quote-unquote Amazon page by going to amazon.totlb.com. And literally all that does is take you to the Amazon page, and we get a little bit of a kickback from anything that you buy on Amazon through that. Or you can visit us at patreon.com/totlb and sign up as one of our subscribers effectively. It helps us do things like get maybe a new recorder, because the batteries keep magically dying.
Yeah, I don't
in the
know
recorder.
What's going on here. So, I don't know if it's just the batteries or what the fuck.
Yeah, but there's always something that we're, you know, either looking to travel to a place, like, you know, in a couple of years, we want to go to Cuba or going to San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes.
Those are going to require us to either pay out of pocket or leverage your help in working towards that. Please. So so visit us at, you
Michael
know,
Kirk will give you sad handies.
We're just going to put that out there, aren't we? You're on the line for it now. So visit us at www.totlb.com to learn more about that. And if you don't want Michael Kirk to plunge into a suicidal depression where he literally spanks himself to death, please, 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 because we would hate to hear about Michael Kirk masturbating himself to death, give us a call at 970-573-6148.
Even if it's a robocall.
Even if it's a robocall, Jonathan Blackshire, that was amazing. You can't climb the ladder with your penis in your hands. So, but please,
all right,
give us a call. Leave us a message at 970-573-6148. We love to participate with you guys. We love reading your comments. We love reading your comments on the show. We love hearing your voicemails. They crack us up most of the time.
Michael's hilarious.
Dude, Jonathan's was hilarious.
It was
too,
fun. Because I didn't know who it was until just now. So
I know. I didn't either. And I love that it tells our listeners to call Honda of Greeley at 876-5309. So weird, but it's great. We want to participate with you. Yes. So please visit us on social media and get in touch with us. If you have a project that you're working on, whether it be a band, a comic book, a movie, a TV show, anything that you're working on, if you want to get your, you know, shit out there so that other people are hearing about it. You know, we may not have a huge listener base, but there are definitely people listening to this show. And there are definitely people that are going to be interested in what you're doing. Because if you're interested in this show, so are the other people that are listening to this show. Right. And if you're making something, they want to hear about it. And if you're tentative, I don't know if I want to make this comic book. I don't know if I want to be in this band. Just fucking do it. Like, we got off of our asses and we did this podcast, and now we've done more than 50 episodes of it, and we can't
wait
to do more.
We've interviewed some of the coolest people.
Dude, we have interviewed some crazy cool people. So, and it's fun. Like, it's great. If you enjoy something, fucking go out and do it. And once you have it done, or you've started down the path of getting it done, contact us and we'd love to have you on the show. So
it'll be 2 weeks from today, but go see Bye Bye Man. Robert Kurtzman, he did all the special effects. It came out today.
It's out, yeah.
But 2 weeks from when you hear this episode.
Good point, yeah. It looks
so
good.
Go see it. Listen to his interview in the episode previous to this one. It's good.
Yeah.
I like it.
He was awesome. Yeah. He was a pleasure to talk to. And it was cool to talk to him about something that he's still passionate about, even though he did it fucking 20 years ago.
Right.
Dude, like, that's awesome that he... I mean, how could you not love your job? I make monsters for movies.
Fucking A.
Fuck yeah, dude. So be sure to check out Penguins versus Possum.
Yes, from Fanbase Press.
From Fanbase Press. We loved having those guys on the show. They once again nailed their show bump. I love talking to those guys. So far the shit that's coming out on Fanbase is really fun.
Yes.
So I can't wait to see what those guys do next. So with that said, I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
I'm John.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Visit us at www.totlb.com.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.